It has been the one song of those who thirst after absolute power, that the interest of the state requires that its affairs should be conducted in secret. But the more such arguments disguise themselves under the mask of public welfare, the more oppressive is the slavery to which they will lead. Better that right counsels be known to enemies than that the evil secrets of tyrants should be concealed from the citizens. They who can treat secretly of the affairs of a nation have it absolutely under their authority, and as they plot against the enemy in time of war, so do they against the citizens in time of peace.
One, two.
It's Saturday night. You're live from the bunker with your host, Dire Wolf.
Natural and obviously to say that we live in the physical world. Here's all of us. We're walking around in this physical world here, right? But you see, that is a conventional point of view. That is a convention of our existence. To think in those terms. To presume in those terms. We say things like, there is this external world, and I am me. You are you. There's the universe. See, we say things like this. All we need to do is to really consider, really observe our condition fundamentally.
Brainwashing 12-year-old and younger station that hides behind a slick image. We're so cool that we decide what's cool. And now MTV News, the news that is single-handedly dumbing down our country, which is cool.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this special March 22nd, 2006 episode of From the Bunker here on RevereRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Dire Wolf, and tonight we have a very special guest with us. Again, we have Mr. Michael Tesserian. Now, Michael's a divination scholar and a world-renowned author of the books Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation, The Irish Origins of Civilization, and the Terrascope series, and was just recently on a two-hour special on Atlantis on the Sci-Fi Channel. And tonight we'll be talking more on the cult of Atan and the symbolism this cult uses. How's everything going tonight, Michael?
Everything's going very well, Thomas. It's nice to be back.
Good. Well, thank you for coming on, sir.
Not at all. It's always a pleasure. The thing with going on television, as you just mentioned, is that neither the program usually or, you know, gives you the time to do justice to the content, which is, of course, the first interest of somebody like me. And secondly, you know, it's just they clip out everything, you know, important that you're going to say. So, you know, again, that underlines and underscores shows like your own, where there's a definite interest in doing justice to the topic as opposed to just entertainment, you know. So, again, I want to thank you for your, you know, allowing me these extended, you know, broadcasts to get into the meat of this incredible subject.
Well, like I said, you are one of my favorite authors, but hands down, and your information is enlightening to me, so, and thank to you. Many others.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's certainly the time to get the information out. It was good, brilliant experience to do that show. And, I mean, they were very, very into what I was doing from the point of view of the interview, and there may be future shows actually in that series on sci-fi. But you know, let's not forget that that was a 2-hour in-depth interview they did with me. So those people who saw the final product, you can tell just how much hit the cutting room floor.
Oh yeah.
When you real, you know, so again, you know, again, we can't really look to mainstream media as whatever they're doing, whether you like it or you don't like it. The thing is that, you know, we just can't wait for mainstream media to get up on their hind legs and come running to the, you know, people, alternative historians, to ask us, you know, and to give us millions of dollars to do what we're doing. So that's why people should very much not take for granted the shows that, you know, people like yourself are putting on, and also the information that's on the internet. Should be very, very conscious of that. Of that.
Well, I totally agree with you on that. Yeah. Now, the last time we spoke was on a very interesting date itself, 666. And now that we speak again, it's 9 days into the Israeli bombardment of Lebanon, and they're talking about a full-scale invasion. What are your thoughts, and what have you heard on this subject?
Well, it's interesting, you know, to me, these kinds of conflicts that you're talking about are so much just mere carry-ons of what has been going on for centuries. And, you know, it's when people look at this conflict, they have to realize, first of all, it has a tremendous history, but, you know, just the atrocity of it, that it's done in the name of God. Can we just address that for a few minutes? The fact that here we have a so-called, you know, holy people in a so-called holy province under God. I mean, they're using the word God. You can't turn on TBN. You can't turn on the pro-Zionist evangelists like Van Imp and, you know, Hagee or Benny Hinn or any of these creatures. Any of these puppets of the royal dynasties, and they're always talking about God and all of this. But, you know, how come is it that they forgot that the fourth commandment is thou shalt not kill? How can Jews, of course, I'm talking about Zionists, no true Jew would ever condone or, you know, violence of any kind, especially when you're not really being threatened. But the very fact of the matter is just like the same thing that happened to me, you know, observing it in Northern Ireland, or the same thing that's going on in Bosnia. You know, how can it be, why do they continue to make this a holy war? There's a contradiction in terms. So, you know, there's something going on the internet. For instance, I have it posted on my blog and on the website, where it shows, you know, children, young girls and boys, no more than 10 years of age, signing their names on missiles that are about to be put into guns and fired at Palestinian children. And the Israeli children are signing, you know, well-wishing notes and names on it, going, here, you know, suck this on the other side. These are kids. They're so indoctrinated. You know, and then that, doesn't that extend to the whole philosophy of what we're teaching children in general? And it's done, these people grow up to be the next generation of intolerance and tyrants, because their parents have lied to them. The parents don't know any better. The parents have bought into this Masonic created full conflict for which they're totally responsible. They're saying it's under God, then hold to that, because that God, you know, or the real force of justice in the world, is going to judge not only you, but the God in whose name you're working on this. So, you know, this is the incredible lie that's being perpetrated. These people with a straight face can tell you that to wage a holy war against people like this is a godly thing. How evil, how preposterous.
Well, obviously they're worshiping some deity that is evil or preposterous at that point, you know, because...
There you have it. This is the key thing that we need to get out to the world, and that is that when you're talking Jehovah, you're not talking about no God of Israelites. You're talking about Aton, and you're talking about Lucifer, and you're talking about Adonai, and you're talking about a secret cult of Levitical Egyptian pharaonic entities that have got nothing whatsoever in common with the modern Jew, a term that has been hijacked. People who've converted to a religion and who mean well and should be reading their Torah, the Bible, where it says thou shalt not kill, tremendous commandments, tremendous moral, you know, significance. But you see, look how evil things have got, where we cannot even... Usually, in the media, especially in the mainstream media, you're not even permitted to bring up the question of culpability of Jews, because there's an entire B'nai B'rith Masonic coterie, right, involved in making a stigma. As soon as you mention anything to do with Judaism or Zionism, they've got you labeled as an anti-Semite. So we always have to, you know, preempt and prefix everything we're saying, that we're not Jew-baiting and Jew-bashing. We're not part of some, you know, super racist, you know, conglomerate or corporation here. bashing Jews when we are talking about international Zionism. Now, if a Jew is so committed to, you know, what they have been taught, to not be able to understand that, well, then there's nothing you can do about that. But the sane person realizes that we are talking about a Masonic political structure of super wealthy Gentiles and royal dynasties who have created a faux Judaism, which is Zionism, to which most Torah Jews would never have anything to do with it, because it is bloodthirsty and Masonic in nature, and has really nothing to do with the ancient Palestinian Jews that they think that they are descended from. Not at all. It's a campaign that's been a smokescreen, a very cleverly crafted puppet show that's been made to create incredible conflict in the world so that the real Jew is at the top of the totem pole can exist behind the camouflage, behind the long grass. And so the real reason in modern history of why the State of Israel was so appealing, as I think we mentioned on a show before, is because Russian geologists discovered that the Dead Sea Basin was incredibly rich in minerals. So rich, in fact, that the Dead Sea area outweighs the amount of, you know, like from a point of view of stock exchange, from a point of view of the wealth of minerals that exist there, the heavy industry minerals, is more in the Dead Sea than the entire world put together. Now, the Russian geologists, who, of course, we have to understand, the Soviet experiment is basically, you know, the brainchild of the London Masonic royal families and of New York, the super Zionist factions funding it. So anything that goes to Soviet Russia is going to end up on the desks of the Rothschilds and the Warburgs. And that's exactly what happened. So that is why it was conspired immediately. Out of the complete blue, no Jewish person had ever even heard of this concept of Zionism. They start putting out Chaim Weizmann and Theodor Herzl and the entire coterie of Zionist Jews who are actually just puppets of the royal families and who are given a lot of prestige by Truman, who's one of the most despicable creatures that ever lived on the face of this earth, President Truman. They were given the endorsement, they were given the funding to go to every city of the world and speak to synagogues, and the Jewish rabbis are like scratching their heads going, what the hell are these guys talking about from our pulpits? And most of the Jewish rabbis wouldn't buy into it. But unfortunately, some of the extreme right-wing Jews did buy into it, and there was so much money was put into it. And so the idea of the State of Israel was concocted. It's called a state because it's not a country and it's not a nation. It's an appendage of the British and the American government, which sustains it with guns and bombs and nuclear weapons and money. And it was very important that they used the ideological, theological, religious lie, because otherwise nobody would go there and nobody would populate it. So they created this smokescreen lie of Zionism to make it appear to Jews who are not going to really do their homework that this land is a land without a people for a people without a land. And so, yeah, well, people are dumb enough all over the world, so they, you know, they leave the real Israel, which is America, the assimilated 10 tribes who should have nothing to do with this Zionist lie. Many of their children believed it. They've only got, you know, America's only been settled 180 years. And the Jewish people here are brainwashed into believing that, no, let's go back to some desert out there that doesn't even belong to us, massacre the indigenous people who are there and take over because somebody, some Zionist said that it's the Holy Land. And believe me, people were dumb enough to do this. And now they're backing up their stupidity by this mass murder that's going on.
Well, you got that right with mass murder. It's complete genocide, just like
sure
this
it is.
Just like
now,
this country
do you
committed.
Think that if the media found out that Palestinian children were writing their autographs and you know, doodling on the weapons that were going to massacre, you know, be bombing into Tel Aviv, don't you think that they would be putting that on every single channel that exists in every single country and town, every single city in this country? Don't you think the news up in, you know, in Bay Area and Seattle and these places, you have four new mainstream news channels. Don't you think that if it was Palestinian kids doing that, that it would be on every single network? But because it's Jewish kids doing it, we don't hear a peep out of it. That just shows you how controlled the media is.
Well, yeah, and that not only that, you look at the majority of the East Coast rabbis, they are so anti-Zionist, it's disgusting.
Right. Yeah, and that's to be understood, because they are clever people who've read the Torah, and they know this has nothing to do with us, and this is a preposterous fiction that was created in 1948, just after the Second World War, when the war had subsided and America was dribbling in wealth, very wealthy country, had come out of the war much richer than it went in, but British Israelites, about the Jews that are put in front of us. They suddenly discovered, by way of these worldwide reconnaissance missions, because Soviet Russia ostensibly wanted also power, and it wanted land, and it wanted to expand its territory. So it sent a geologist, and just as a pure fluke, and Douglas Reed and other scholars who've written on this subject of the Soviet geologist, it was a pure fluke that they went out there and discovered that the Dead Sea Basin, which had completely been ignored, because after all, it's in the Middle East, it had been completely ignored, was filled with all of these heavy minerals. So the Rothschilds wanted it. But you just can't go in there with some British army and take over, because then you really will have a problem. So, because then you'll have overt. You see, and at that time, at the time of Lord Soames, and at the time of the Balfour Declaration, England was on very good terms with the Palestinians. So they could not invade openly, because they had many treaties with the Arabs and with the Palestinians. They're all on excellent terms, by the way. So it would look very bad, you see, if the British government suddenly ostensibly turned against them. So they had to do it subtly, and they did it through this movement of the Zionist movement. It's very similar. Anybody listening to our show who's actually from Holland, who's a Boer, who lives in South Africa, will know exactly what we're talking about, because this was exactly the same strategy that was employed during the time of Queen Victoria, when gold was discovered under the veldt in South Africa. Now, the veldt and all of Johannesburg and South Africa, the entire of South Africa, was run by the Dutch, the Boers, who are incredibly, you know, decent, honorable people, who are Christians, and who live an incredibly moral life, and live very close to the land, were lovers of animals, and that was their land, and it was even given to them by the Queen of England. It was actually signed, sealed, and delivered, legally, that this is their land. However, a certain prospector, whose name I can't remember, was out there digging around and found rivers of gold underneath, you see, the land that the Boers owned. So what did happen? Queen Victoria sent in the weight and the mass of the British army, totally against the contracts that had already been signed, and took away their land, and then started the Boer War, of which Winston Churchill was involved. And the Boers were then massacred. The first concentration camps, are you aware of this, that the first concentration camps were British, and they were in the Boers in South Africa?
I was not aware of that at all.
Were you aware that the Knights of Malta cross was being worn by some of the British troops?
Wow.
That's right. So when they're talking to you about concentration camps and the evil Nazis, well, of course, we know the Nazis were evil, and they were also funded by the super Zionists of New York, but let's leave that aside. The first concentration camps are in South Africa, where men, women, and children died in their thousands under Lord Kitchener. Hideous, monstrous deaths, where they blew up men, women, and children in the British Raj, the time of the British Empire. They don't tell you that the first eugenics experiments were done in America in 1929, in South Carolina and in Dakota, where the first sterilizations were done, you see. They don't talk about all of that. They always want to, you know, tell you it was in Germany that these things happened.
Well, that's where Hitler learned it from, was from us.
Of course he did. He learned it from Sir Francis Galton and all the people I go into in the DVDs. Yeah, these are the brainchilds, not of Germany. In fact, Nazism is a brainchild of London and of New York. It has nothing to do with Germans. Germany, the campaign of Germanophobia, has been many hundreds of years in the making. Its triumph, the triumph of the destruction of the German people, has been through Nazism. Nazism was not German for Germany. First, you had to eviscerate the economy of Germany, which was done through the First and Second World War and through the Versailles Treaty, and then you put your own politicians in, people like Hitler, highly funded specialists and double agents, because Hitler was a British agent, a double agent. I've always known that. And him and his men, like Hess, and especially Canaris. Why don't people connect the dots and find out that Hitler was not German for Germany? For goodness sake, Hitler had executed the leaders of the German army, people like Ernst Röhm. Anyone who was German for Germany, he slaughtered. And he did it at the behest of the German aristocracy. We have incredible looming contradictions that I've gone into in my work. And one of them is the fact that this Hitler was nothing but a British pawn, Ribbentrop. Ribbentrop used to come in constantly as guests of the British nobility. You can go into houses of the British nobility to this day and find in their personal albums pictures of von Ribbentrop. The Guinness clan, in their personal albums, their family albums, have pictures of Adolf Hitler.
Wow. Well, I know Henry Ford and Adolf Hitler were great admirers of each other, and both of them had photos of each other in their bedrooms.
Well, now, see, the question of Henry Ford is that he was one of the Americans who sympathized because he bought into the lie mistakenly. He was not aware of what was going on. He was not aware that Hitler was a British agent. He really, truly did think that Hitler was a German for Germany, and thinking that, thinking that, you know, Hitler, Herr Hitler, would resolve many of the problems of Europe, he unwittingly believed in what Hitler was doing for his own purposes. And I can identify with a lot of those purposes. But the bigger story, the more secret story, is that this particular demagogue, Hitler, just like Mussolini — did you know that Mussolini was a communist for all the years of his life? Long before he became a fascist, he was a well-known communist in that country?
No, I did not know that.
Did you know that one of the very first things that Mussolini did was give the papal states back to the Vatican?
Wow.
The Vatican was not even located in Italy. It had lost a lot of its lands. It was mostly centered in France. One of the first things that this so-called fascist conservative does, Mussolini, is gives back the Vatican City to the Vatican. You can check this out in any encyclopedia. This man gave full rights to the church, to the Pope, because just like Hitler, he was shaking hands with the Vatican. These are Vatican puppets. These are people who had a lot in common with the Vatican. So we have to realize how many of these incredible looming contradictions there are. We're talking about this latest conflict in Israel and how these pro-Zionist politicians and evangelists are coming on and weeping and drooling about the terrible terrorism of Hezbollah and the terrible terrorist, you know, Palestinian organizations. Well, let's make things very, 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 very simple for people. The Secret Service of Israel is called Mossad, right?
Yes.
Do you know what their slogan is?
It's to deceive, and I can't remember exactly what it is, but tell us, please.
They have a red flag on which there's the Jewish menorah, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, the red background is also worrying enough, because anybody who's looked at my work and Jordan Maxwell's work knows what the red square means. And the motto is, "With clandestine terror, we will conduct war."
Absolutely incredible.
I'm not making this up. In the Hebrew writing, it says, "With clandestine terror," that's hidden terror, secret terror, "we will conduct war."
Well, look,
in plain writing.
Look how Israel was created, too, at the same time, though. I mean, it was nothing but terrorism.
Right.
So, I mean, that's how they created their state, by terrorizing the Arabs to get them out.
Precisely. And it was done for monetary gain. The super Zionist Rothschilds didn't mind sacrificing the poor Jews who are there being murdered and slaughtered. Most of them are Zionists, some are not. They didn't mind sacrificing these ordinary people to come from America and come from Russia, you know, and a lot of the people believed in the religious lie that they have some connection to the Holy Land, and let's go over there. You know, I have no particular debate with that. That's a personal choice. But behind that is the Warburgs, the Bowers, the Rothschilds, the Oppenheimers, and the British establishment greedily wanting that land, because anyone who controls the Dead Sea Basin from Lebanon, from Israel — you see, you need to be close by — is a combatant to the Arab countries of Iran and Iraq, as you can now see they are, and they have their hands on the greatest wealth that would dwarf all the wealth that you could even think of that they've made in other ways. Any money that they've made through wars, you know, and Second World War, First World War, and opening different banks and seizing the gold of America, all of this kind of things that they've done to seize money and liquidate, that's nothing compared to the mineral wealth that exists there. And people need to look into this. It's a question of geology. So go and ask any geologist about the Dead Sea Basin, and they will tell you the story that I'm talking about. And if anybody wants to know the source of this, one of the greatest writers to read upon this particular question is one of the greatest and most suppressed of all authors, is called Douglas Reed. This man was once upon a time England's greatest journalist, and I'm not overestimating that. Douglas Reed, before he was suppressed because he found the truth, was the greatest journalist in America, in England, during the 1930s. And he wrote many famous books and wrote incredible articles. I think he was like the Times journalist. And he was one of the last free-thinking journalists also. He was one of the last free independent minds before the whole Leviathan, you see, Conrad Black and all of the Rupert Murdochs and all of these people took over. And Douglas Reed wrote a book called The Controversy of Zion. And this is available from Noontide Publishing Company. Noontide, Noontide. People can get onto the web and go to Noontide and try to find a Douglas Reed Controversy of Zion. So the entire and elaborate reason for the state of Israel and why it's existing will be laid out. And people from Jewish persuasion who are giving their money unwittingly to these super Zionist monstrosities need to read that book and find out about their own history and what lies have been told to them. If some Jew comes along and goes, "I am happy to live in America because this is the land that was promised to us, because out of the 12 famous tribes of Israel, 10 have absorbed into the West long, long time ago, and we are assimilated into the Western countries, and we are Jewish by conversion, and we look at America, and we've built America, we fought for America, and we want to die in this country, and we have businesses here, and we are doing well. That's perfectly all right. That's exactly permitted. Just in the same way as Scots-Irish fought and died for this country and want to remain here. But then let's do that openly. Let's not have some secret Masonic, clandestine, absolutely violent, ruthless, bloodthirsty British henchmen spilling lies through the mouthpieces of false rabbis and synagogues and so on. People need to investigate this question because it's extremely important. We might be in a third world war situation right now. And we got to realize that those boundaries that exist now between Kuwait, Iraq, Iran, do you know that those boundaries that exist between Lebanon and between Israel are artificial? They're not even more than 40, 50 years old. They were created by the Balfour Declaration, by the British intelligence, when they divided up the war after the First World War.
Yeah, it's just like Kuwait with Iraq. I know Kuwait was created by the British.
Yep. And it's Saudi Arabia, the British Emirates, the Dubai Emirates, the Arab Emirates states, none of this existed. Look back on maps before the Second World War, but certainly before the First World War, and you won't find any of those demarcations whatsoever. It was completely different. We've just come out of that Ottoman Empire, that Turco Empire. And later on, Britain, which came out very wealthy. See, Britain had allies. Germany and Turkey have always fought together against the allies, so-called, all right? Italy was always an ally of Germany. The Serbs were allies of America and Britain. The Turks, therefore, suffered a lot when Britain and the Allies won the war. So Britain could go in and penalize the enemies of, Britain. You'll see this in old black and white movies. You watch some old black and white, movies of the time of the First World War. Those movies with, Charles Boyer and, Conrad Veidt.
Uh-huh.
Watch cleverly and you'll see that the Germans are in league with the Turks and with a couple of other people and the Italians and the Croats. And the British are of course, allies of what? The French, the Americans, the Canadians, right? The Irish Guards, the Scots, and also on the foreign shore, they were allied with the Serbs. So this is why it is absolutely reprehensible that Bill Clinton and George Bush have been supporting the Croats against the Serbs, in the latest Bosnian crisis. It's more than evil because those are our allies of old. And yet the world stood by while Serbs were massacred by enemies that once upon a time, Thomas, were enemies of England and Canada and America, namely the Croats. Because the Croats have a secret police called the Utashi, right? And everybody in Bosnia knows that name. These people outdo the Nazis in their death camps and in their torture chambers, okay? They're the most fierce and sinister secret police. And these people fought with the Nazis against the Allies. So wouldn't you expect that in return for the Serbian help, that Britain and America would always be then favoring the Serbs and be honoring them for their fighting for us?
Wow.
Yeah, and yet look what has happened to that country, and not a single Serbian person is ever brought on to tell you the true story of what has happened. These are Christian people who've had their temples and their churches destroyed, their people massacred, and they are now painted as the evil Nazi fascist type of people over there. You know why? Because their land is very rich in minerals. Because Western companies want to go in there and open ski resorts on their beautiful hills because the Serbs own the Yugoslavs as incredible land. It's one of the most beautiful countries in the world. Anybody who's gone on holiday there will know that. And now that they've eviscerated that country, they no longer have a threat. They no longer have a Christian threat. They no longer have an economic threat. The atom bombs that were dropped on Japan, when obviously Japan was already going to surrender, eviscerated their civilization and their economy so that American super Zionist Rothschild-based money could go in there and pretend now to be these Japanese, companies that are selling you cars and selling you stereos. And nothing Japanese about it at all. Just because they put a Japanese person in front of you and a Japanese name on the company, that doesn't mean it's Japanese. The Japanese were working in lime mines in these cities less than 40 years ago. They were feudal. It's a miracle they could even get an army together to fight on the side of Germany. And they were ruthless, brutal, like they are brutal and ruthless to their women to this day. And they were a feudal people, absolutely sworn to death to the stupid emperor of those. They're literally going to die. You've seen these movies, you know what I'm talking about. They were absolutely primitive. How on earth could them, those people overnight be creating this incredible corporation, Japanese Incorporated, where, you know, they're flooding the West with all of these products, and everybody going darn with Japanese cars and imports. My goodness, what ignorance.
Yeah,
made in Japan means made in New York. Made funded. Those are American companies. They are royal British companies because that country had its economy eviscerated.
Well, yeah, a couple nukes will do that to you.
Yep, same thing in the Middle East. These demarcations. So now we find ourselves in a situation of war, which is completely going on there, based on the seizing of the mineral resources over there. And they're very threatened by these Arabs, you see, that have the oil, and so at least that's put before us. But you know, I would not buy into any of the rubbish that they're telling you on the television. Most of these Arabs are completely controlled by British royal family. How many times have you seen the Queen shaking their hands? So all this oil is, you know, Dutch Royal Shell, BP. This oil is in the hands of the British royal family. It's got nothing to do with any Arabs over there, evil Iranians. As I told you, when these country boundaries were created and these fictional countries were created after the First and Second World War, they were absolutely the original political structure there, and the original rulers of those countries were annihilated. Anyone who is a leader in any of those Arab countries is appointed by British Crown.
I could totally believe that. I mean, that's like with anything around here. I mean, look at our presidents.
That's right, same thing. And anybody who doubts this, and I want to hear doubt, because doubt is an expression of freedom, go and get a book called The Peace to End All Peace. Just, you can go on to Amazon and type in Peace to End All Peace and get that book and read it. And it will tell you the true story of Winston Churchill. It will tell you the rise of the Macy's group. Macy's were related to the Turks. These are the Turks within Turkey who would not back the Nazis and who were in league with Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill had an exceptionally good, what you would call, intelligence network. And he had already infiltrated the Turks, because he knew that if there's a war between Britain and England, right? England and Germany, Turkey was the important piece on the board that might support Germany. So he already had his agents in through the Masonic Order to select those young Turks who were already, in peacetime, upset with the Turkish government, because the Turkish were, you know, too strict, too Muslim, and far, far too callous and bloodthirsty and strict. So the young Turks, these are university, westernized type of Turks. Winston Churchill funded them. He got them through the Masonic lodges, and they were known collectively as the Young Turks. And they were a secret organization that was used by British intelligence to overthrow the Turkish government so that the Turkish government could then not side on the side of Adolf Hitler and during the war, you see. And then when Britain won, they had to reward these Young Turks, because now what you do is you reward. It's just like the people coming in front of the king, and now he'll reward you for the services that you've done. This is the old way it was from the time of the earliest kings. You now reward the barons, and you reward the feudal lords. So the prize that was given to some of these young Turks was incredible wealth, and open doors to New York and to the business world, and there were bank loans and highest positions in university. And that's where Macy's comes from. That star that you see, that five-pointed Masonic star that's on the Macy's Corporation, why is that there? Find out. Find out where there's a Masonic star on Walmart, and why this Walmart hideous, monstrous corporation is doing so well, eating up the land, while jobs, healthy jobs, are outsourced, and people have to push a cart now and be baggers for $5 an hour with absolutely no rights, and other private businesses put out of business in this country. This country came out of the war richer than it went in. And now you've got Walmart that will hire all these foreigners and people that, you know, have no legal status here, and then treat them like shit, while bona fide jobs are being lost to the Orient. America is fast becoming a third world country. Right now, there's even the rumor now that we're going to have the Amero, a new currency in America. That's this whole NAFTA. It's a follow-on of NAFTA, where the dollar is already null and void, and they're going to bring in this currency that will be stretching from Tierra del Fuego to Alaska.
Well, I know Lou Dobbs was speaking about it a few weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago, and we've had Rob Revere, the gentleman who runs Revere Radio Network.
Yes, I'll be on his show very soon.
Oh, good. They were both talking about this meeting they had in Cancun about, I think it was in March.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I guess it's all signed, sealed, and delivered for 2007 as far as the Pan-American Union.
I wouldn't be surprised. And along with it will come the final, It's the final identity card number. Where you're going to, you know, everyone, it's already bad enough.
Well, yeah, and that's supposed to come out this year, actually. It's supposed to come out in November of this year for the national ID card.
Yeah.
That passed year before last, and I believe it's supposed to take effect this year in November for the national ID card. But I figured also since Bush signed in that, I can't remember what it's called, but it's in case we're bio-attacked or what have you, you have to, and you're going to be forcibly inoculated with some vaccine. Well, right there, they can biochip you.
That's right.
And that would make total sense to me to get your biochip right then and there to make sure you got your vaccine. That's how you prove you got it, is you have your chip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is probably what's coming down the line. It may take a few more years, but you can better believe they're going to instigate it very quickly. You know, I don't like to get into fear-mongering, but, you know, one has to obviously look out for these things. And we're not in a democracy. If we were in a democracy in this country, there'd be no IRS, there'd be no Federal Reserve. Each state would be taking care of its own business before it thought of things at the federal level. You know, none of this is really actually happening. So you can forget about democracy. So absolutely, the framework is already there for them to instigate this. And we're living, there's so much paranoia. Paranoia in the news about bird flu and this kind of problem and, you know, are we safe? And all this nonsense. The borders are wide open, and then we have newscasters talking about, you know, Homeland Security, and let's get even more safe. I mean, what kind of contradictoriness, you know, do we have here?
You know, a point Freeman brought up last week, too, that I didn't even realize was causing a mass plague through HAARP. And with the chemtrails they've been dumping on us and the barium and aluminum, et cetera, that they're slapping on us, being able to cause some massive plague through HAARP.
There's no question in my mind. They don't even need to go as far as HAARP. They just need to increase these chemtrails. They're absolutely incredible, and they're doing it. They can easily up that. They can do it at night where you won't even be able to see it. And unless one of these planes actually crashes, and some local yokels, these brainless people who can't even understand that they're being chemically poisoned from the air, these are not the, what do you call it, the jettison of the ordinary aircraft, whatever that's called, the backfire of that. Until one of these planes crashes on top of their heads and they can see these canisters, this world, this unbelievably dumbed down, tranquilized mass of humanity still will not understand it. And even then, when they've taken photographs of it, they still might believe the lies that are being told to them by the official sources. How dumb can people get?
Yeah, I was showing some photos of them slapping the canisters into the back of the planes, UN planes at that, and I'm sorry, they were NATO planes, not UN. They were NATO aircraft, and they were slapping these big canisters in the back of them to go and spray us. And, of course, I got accused of it's a Photoshop.
That's right.
You know, it's all fake.
But I'm hoping, I'm praying every day that one of them is literally going to crash in some place where, you know, it can't be denied. And the stuff is spewing all over the place. Because, you know something, if that's what it takes, then so be it. Because we need this stuff about chemtrails thoroughly exposed, and it's not going to get exposed in any other way unless one of these things actually ditches somewhere and all the population, you know, sees it physically or is even contaminated by it. I mean, that's what it's going to take, isn't it?
It seems that way. I mean, I see them constantly in Portland. If I go out to Idaho, I don't see them at all. But in Portland, they're massive, and especially
at nighttime. They're not so concerned with the people that are already kind of, you know, voting for George Bush out in the middle of the nowhere.
Exactly. And it's, you know, the population's barely a million in that state, and it's larger than the size of Texas as far as square miles go.
And don't forget that they have a lot of underground bases there. They don't want to be spraying areas where they're also working and they have military detachments out there.
Yeah, that would make total sense.
There's no military detachments working in Portland or Seattle or, you know, the Bay Area, so they don't mind doing it there because that's where just ordinary, you know, ordinary Johnny Sixpack is hanging out, and they've had a campaign of genocide for goodness knows how long, and this is one of the greatest ways to do it. I mean, the science fiction writers have been writing about this since I don't know how far back, People can go out and look at it. They can take telescopes and actually binoculars is good enough to be able to see that this is not the effluence of ordinary plane. You can actually see chemtrails, planes passing, and beside it you'll see a regular plane. And when you see a regular plane in the sky, along with a chemtrail plane, you will see that the regular plane, it's the smoke from the back of it, the gas, fades away.
Yeah, it's just water vapor is all it is from the engines.
And it fades away. And then on this side, you can see the chemtrail. But you point out to somebody and go, look at that, that's poison from the air. They're not going to believe you.
No, they'll say it's always been there. It's always been like that.
Isn't it? Now, so what do you want to do? What can you do then except understand why we're in the state that we're in? When you have people that are this broken, this tranquilized, then, you know, and when you turn on the television or you look at the non-issues, and I mean that capital letters, that they preoccupy themselves with, the non-issues, you know, Britney freaking Spears or whatever it might be, right? And here you are, you have poison falling from the sky. You've got your, you know, government passing unbelievable rules, unbelievable anti-human conditions. You have war breaking out. You've got all sorts of things. And this television, how evil and preposterous it is that these spin doctors are worrying about the merest thing,
well,
utterly taking up human energy.
Well, it's like we've mentioned before in earlier broadcasts on, you know, how the world's media is controlled by five people.
That's right. We only need to look at, on my website, I have, on one of the astrotheology pages, I have the word, the actual origins of the word government. Now, let's keep it really, really simple. The word government actually comes from the Latin gubernare. And it comes from the Greek, kubernon, K-U-B-E-R-N-A-N. And kubernon in Greek means to control. And the ment part of it, government, mente, is obviously, you can look it up in any dictionary or look it up on a Latin dictionary online, mente, M-E-N-T-E, means mind. So kubernon, mind, mente. Right? The government is just a harder sounding term of gubernare or kubernon, and that means to control, and ment is mind, the control of the mind.
Absolutely incredible.
Nothing is hidden from us. Nothing is hidden from us. It's in plain view, but we see, we have been tranquilized into not seeing it. And so my work and your work and all we can do is get people to open their eyes to see what is already there and question it. Why are all the flags the same? Why does every nation state and commonwealth country, I don't care if it's a little dusty outpost of Africa, when they want a coat of arms and they want to register that they have a flag, they have to appeal and apply to the College of Arms in London, a Masonic institution that's age old. It dates from goodness knows when, all the way back to the Tudor dynasty. And that's why flags are so similar in the world. You keep seeing them being mostly tripart, like they have three bars of colors, either horizontally or vertically running. Doesn't anybody question that, has anybody who creates these flags got no imagination, that you think that so many hundreds of flags all look the same? Well, of course they look the same, because they're all leased. They're leased to these countries by the British Queen. You apply.
I was always curious on how they did get their flag, and wow, thank you for that.
Well, anybody who doesn't believe this needs to get out the first James Bond movie on Her Majesty, on Her Secret Service. What is it? Her Majesty's
Secret Service, yeah.
Right. Get out that movie with George Lansbury, or whatever his name is, Lazenby, and watch that film, and watch it with educated eyes, and they will send the character, the Bond character, because James Bond is asked to infiltrate a super criminal who is played by Telly Savalas. But let's look at this symbolically for a moment. The super criminal is in the genetics. But that's not officially known. Officially, he's into some normal external thing, like he's an inventor, and he's doing good for the world. He's going to create something that's going to help the world. But later on, they find out, no, he's actually into eugenics and into gene research. And he lives on the top of a mountain. Remember, we're talking about the Eye of Aton and the 14th level of the pyramid?
Yeah.
And the pyramid is the... And Paramount also showed the Mount Sinai. What do they show you in this James Bond movie? That the guy lives at the peak of a pyramid, at the peak of a mountain that's completely inaccessible. Nobody gets in. Look at the Masonic symbolism. Then Bond infiltrates, And the way that he infiltrates is because he goes to the College of Arms and tries to, he puts on the garb of a person who's into genealogy, some sort of a eccentric Scottish genealogist. And people need to get that movie and watch what is being said in that film about the Bond family, the coats of arms, and the genetic connection, and so forth and so on.
Well, I'll definitely have to give that another look. See, I haven't seen it in probably 20, 25 right. years.
And in the movie, it's very significant that he goes into this College of Arms and walks across the floor, and you have to listen to what he says. It's very important. They're using coded language in this film when they're talking about the Bond ancestry and so forth and so on. There's a secret story being revealed in not just that Bond movie, but in many others. These are certain whistleblowing movies which relate to what we're talking about. But we look at it as a fiction and forget about the incredible symbolism here and the control. People just think that this stuff, you know, just comes out of the blue. Here we have people screaming abuse, and yet their own Secret Service tells you that they're going to be by terrorism operating in the world.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely just insanity at its finest anymore.
Here's another thing. Whenever you commonly now you'll keep hearing these newscasters talking about war on terror. If you're not listening carefully, the right brain, it's just like Live Aid or some of these, whenever they're using a constant refrain, when they're always using this particular social mantra to keep repeating it, it's usually because it has several levels of meaning. When you say the word war on terror, it can also sound like, to your deeper limbic brain, the war on terror, T-E-R-R-A.
So the war on Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. It definitely looks like that anymore, too. I mean,
you have to be you're not consciously aware of it. It's like that old thing with the vase and the face.
Uh-huh.
You know? Who sees the vase and who sees the face kind of thing?
Definitely. Wow. That's definitely an interesting way to look at it.
Because I may be wrong, but it's just I'm used to looking at things symbolically. For instance, remember the old a friend of mine was emailing me, who's got an incredible website where he has actually analyzed the Time covers.
Uh-huh.
The covers of Time magazine. He watched my DVD where I was talking about the subliminal, subversive use of symbolism, especially in cover art and ad copy. And so he went and then he saw one that I had used, an example of the Tree of Life and the Adam and Eve, the primal parents, being used on Time magazine. What does this guy do? He goes and researches all the Time magazine covers from the 1940s and 50s, and on his website, and people can connect to his website through mine, if you go to the Taroscope's links page and look at the part where we have the blogs listed, you will find a website called BraveNewWorldOrder.com. BraveNewWorldOrder.com. And this guy has gone in and shows you the front covers and analyzes it based on Masonic geometry. And one of the things that he showed was, remember the old Steven Spielberg E.T. movie?
Uh-huh.
Where it shows you the alien hand. The cover art was the hand of the E.T. with a little glowing finger touching the finger of the boy.
Yeah.
And that was even used as their poster. How many people realize that that was taken from Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel, where God, the Creator, is touching Adam?
Wow.
Now, why is it that out of the hundreds of thousands of images, that they should pick a image, which, of course, deals with a movie if you're just blind enough to think that's all it means, but it's a religious symbol. It comes from somewhere. It wasn't invented by the guy that was hired by the publicity department and art department of DreamWorks. No. It's taken from Michelangelo, the creation of Adam. So why is Steven Spielberg using a symbol that says, no. God did not create Adam. E.T.'s created us.
Well, Spielberg's definitely an initiate.
Damn right.
He's Freeman pointed out last week also about the last Star Wars movie that came out, Episode 3. Revenge of the Sith, and the 66 code they had to kill all the Jedi off, and which I found quite interesting. And also the Death Star. I could not believe that. There's a moon off, I believe it's Saturn? I'm not positive. I can't remember. I'll have to check it out. Mr. Hoagland did the story on it, and it's all over his site. Richard Hoagland, it's all over his site.
Right.
And there's this moon. It looks exactly like the Death Star.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, how would they know that?
Now, check this out. The god Mercury has always been considered in in Greek mythology, but in old mythology, wherever Hermes or Mercury or Ogama in the Celtic is known, he's always been the god of speed. He's been the god of flight, the god of speed. Remember the wings on his feet?
Uh-huh.
The wings in his helmet. And he is the god that is able to go between Hades and Olympus. He has open doors. All the other gods are restricted, and you'd think that Jupiter or Jove or Zeus would be able to have access to all parts of creation, and in fact that's not true. It turns out to be Mercury is able to go between the deepest, you know, hells of Hades and the highest aspects of Olympus. So he's the god of communication, and he's the god of speed. Now, how come it is that they gave the name Mercury to the planet? Mercury is the fastest moving planet in our solar system.
Wow, absolutely incredible. They've kept us so dumbfounded for eons. It's disgusting. And just to figure out this knowledge even now, or just little parts of it, I'm still, you know, I get more open daily, but it's still overwhelming on how much is processed and what isn't, and how easy it is to be blinded by this. But if the knowledge is hidden, it's too easy to blind people with it.
Think of the number of Mercury. It takes 88 days for Mercury to spin round the sun. And 88 has always been the number of Mercury. And, of course, an 8 on top of an 8 makes the caduceus that you see the god Hermes using. It looks like two snakes. But if you draw a straight line, vertical, and put 8, and then below it, another figure 8, it makes the same caduceus. So 88 has always been a number associated with Mercury. There's also 88 keys on a piano. And Mercury is related to music and so on. Now, in the movie Back to the Future, in the very last scene, when the professor comes back and picks up the Michael J. Fox character and goes, look, we got to go back into the future, they then revealed, and of course through the movie they had revealed, that the speed of the DeLorean car, this incredible time capsule, is 88 miles an hour that it needs to go to before it can break dimensions.
That's correct. That is totally correct on that.
That is not by accident that they're talking about some strange fluid. Remember, and he's kind of ambiguous about the fluid that moves the car.
Uh-huh.
And the silver car is a connection to Mercury. You'd be amazed at the symbolism in these movies. In the Jedi movies that you're talking about, there's enormous Celtic mythology. One could do a treatise just on, purely on, the Celtic symbolism that Spielberg uses when he's talking about these knights and what's going on. But of course, the Jedi is an actual group of knights that come out of Egypt. Not knights, but priests. Just like the Jews have their Kohens, who are the serpent priests, so did the one of the elite groups of priests, and I mean really elite, the old dragon bloodline coming way back, way down to Atlantis into Egypt, was known as the Jedi. But it had a D on the front. Spielberg just dropped the D. Jedi was already hard enough to pronounce. It's not a very common word in English if you think about it. Before the movie had come out, if you had said the word Jedi to somebody, it would have been pretty, you know, trippy for them to look at that particular spelling. So if they added the D on the front, it would have been even more chaotic. But in fact, the DGEDI is an old priestarchy out of Egypt. I talk about them on the Atlantis DVD. They are the inheritors of the dragon bloodline. So you're absolutely right. The two suns, or the two planetoids that Luke Skywalker is looking at in the horizon in the first Star Wars movie, is an old throwback to the 12th planet Tiamat, the two suns that existed in our solar system. In fact, two heavenly bodies in the sky is often shown as a theme of many, many science fiction shows. The list is endless of the subliminals that are in these movies like Stargate and Fifth Essence. And it's endless. One could do an entire, you know, treatise on just these movies that come out of late, not to mention the Stargate films, the Stargate and the Babylon 5, and even why these names are being used, and so much more. And even the children's programs are absolutely outrageous at some of the symbolism that they use there. You know, I, for instance, keep noticing the number 23, the number 322, because the Skull and Bones Lodge number is 322, and you will find that when Gene Hackman looks at his watch in that movie called Enemy of the State, you'll see as they're leaving, they're pointing to the code 322 to let you know subliminally what they will not say verbally. When their little hideout is being attacked by agents of the government, and he looks at his watch, it's 322. That's a code for you to realize what's really being said. In one of the James Bond movies, and I believe it is... It's the one with Klaus Maria Brandauer as the anti-hero. I can't exactly remember the name of the movie right now, which is full of Masonic symbolism. M, when Bond goes in to get his
little toys.
No, it's actually Dr. No.
Okay.
I think it's actually Dr. No. When M looks at his watch, it's 3:22.
Incredible. Well, one thing you taught me, and I remember the first time I talked to you, it was on Hollywood, and what the meaning of Hollywood is, even. And so that doesn't surprise me at all when it comes to that.
No. Look at Moonraker. The movie Moonraker is almost verbatim a Masonic story, which I put in my Atlantis book. Except they've done it in a theatrical way about the perfectly eugenically, bred people of the world who are now going to leave the planet Earth and set up a civilization elsewhere, or are going to leave the Earth while the Earth is destroyed, you see, and then come back. And don't they meet when Bond actually finally discovers where the secret hideout is? It's in the Andes somewhere, and it's underground. The whole idea of hollow Earth, that the secret temple chambers under the Earth, this is where the ancient technology and the ancient weaponry have been hidden for hundreds of years, which I talk about in my book as the Druids, the Peralt. There's a secret order of Druids that the Welsh people know as the Peralt. And the Peralt were the ones who were specialists in metallurgy, because the Ark of the Covenant, which had to be sequestered away, that would basically incinerate anybody that came near it, was a piece of this broken technology. That when Atlantis was destroyed, so was a lot of the technology. And even some of the nuclear devices that they had were in a terribly unstable form, and so it had to be sequestered away. It was all in pieces, so any of the computer technology or weaponry, a lot of it had to be sequestered away while they tried to find out what to do with it. And this explains the Ark of the Covenant. That's what that contained, I believe, is some incredibly radioactive device. And a lot of this, because it was so toxic, had to be put under the ground. So we have the whole cult of the dwarves and the king under the mountain and the whole sequestering of the what they call the Holy of the Holies, which actually was also included weaponry. And we find many whistleblowing, shows and anecdotes about this.
Wow. Now, with James Bond, being as you were mentioning him, now doesn't 007 have a meaning also? Doesn't that come from Crowley or OTO or something?
No, it comes from actually Sir John Dee. The first 007 was John Dee. John Dee in the 15th, or I think it was the 16th century, he was the court astrologer to Queen Elizabeth I, but he was also the head of the Secret Service. It was at the time of Queen Elizabeth, the Tudor dynasty, that the English decided to have a worldwide international secret police. MI5, whose symbol, by the way, is a pyramid with the eye at the top of it, just in case people want to know that, they were found by, you remember Diana Spencer?
Oh, how can I forget?
Princess
what a beautiful woman, and what a hell of a sacrifice.
Princess Spencer's great-great-great-grandfather was called Sir Edmund Spencer. He and people like John Dee and C. Francis Bacon and, there's a whole list of these people. Basically, the Tudor, the henchmen, the same people who put together the pirates. And, of course, we've been given so much bullshit, Pirates of the Caribbean and all of these Hollywood swank actors, that our brains have turned to mush when we think about the pirates. The whole Errol Flynn swashbuckler, we are sort of rebels, buccaneers of the high seas. What utter nonsense. For a start, in order to navigate the high seas, you need to have a degree from a maritime university. And that, in those days, required to be people of unbelievable intelligence. In fact, you might have said that the captains of the sea vessels were probably the most intelligent of all people in the world at that time, because to go to maritime university, let's just think in our minds what that actually entailed. It entailed that you had to have a full grasp of mathematics, a full grasp of trigonometry, a full grasp of astronomy, as well as all the other legal, and sort of technical expertise that you knew. So anybody who thinks that these guys were out on the high seas merely paddling around on the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean is so far from the truth. Every one of those ship captains, those famous pirates, I don't care if it's William Kidd or Blackbeard or any of these people, but this is what they will not tell you. And I don't care if it's a Portuguese pirate or a Spanish pirate or an Italian pirate or a British pirate. These people were what you call students of the finest maritime universities in Europe at that time. And they were funded to do what they did. They were not rebels who just were dock rats who went around stealing ships on the high seas. They had official documentation. They were under maritime law, British maritime law. They were sent out They were hand-picked because of their expertise, and then they were set on the high seas. And when they picked their particular crew, you didn't have a choice. Go on to Wikipedia or any of the online dictionaries and put in the word press gangs, and you will find out the hideousness. Or just watch Mutiny on the Bounty or any of these movies that show you that when you were sitting in a bar and these naval guys busted in, your ass was already, against your will, you know, we're always talking about free countries and democracies, well, you were impressment. You were impressed into the Navy, whether you liked it or not.
Well, it's like Portland, Oregon, which is a young city for this country. It has its tunnels underground that were all used for Shanghaiing.
That's right.
And it's quite an incredible story. And, of course, you know, that you can take tours of the underground tunnels, and they'll tell you all about how people were Shanghaied.
Right.
And Portland's a little over 100 years old.
Yeah, so the thing is criminal to begin with. And therefore, now that you're, you know, being, your life is in your hands, you have to go and do the despicable things that you're told. Otherwise, you'd be thrown overboard. They're incredibly punitive. And this rule of the high seas has become the order of the Skull and Bones. Did you know that before they used the Skull and Bones, the pirates, you know what their symbol was? A red square.
Really?
Yep.
Absolutely incredible.
That's what it was. The symbol of the pirates was a red flag. A red flag. Anyone who's done 5 seconds of homework on the Masons and their various rituals and the temples, of the Knights of the Temple of Sol and any of this. Now, this brings me to an interesting point that I want to bring up, and that is that, have you noticed of late that there's been, I don't know, maybe half a dozen shows that have been very mainstream. History Channel, Discovery Channel, A&E, some of these very, very mainstream channels that people who are listening to us from Europe may not be familiar with, but let's just say to preview that these are extremely mainstream American channels, have been showing a lot of shows about Atlantis and also about the Freemasons and the Secret Knights, and even based on the Illuminati. There was recently A&E did a two-hour show on the Illuminati with Jim Mars, and then recently the History Channel has done one on the Freemasons. Have you noticed this?
Oh yeah, I have all of those on AVI Video, so I've watched those extensively. They even had David Icke on twice.
Right. Now, do you notice that even though they certainly are based on co-opting people's interest in these subjects, have you noticed how much incredible disinformation is in those programs?
Oh, very much so. I like how they began on one on History Channel. It was on secret societies, and on how these conspiracy theorists, they think these people want to take over the world and how crazy they are. And that's how they started off. And then they go talk to Jim Mars and to David Icke and all these other scholars that have, you know, done their homework.
Some of them they do and some of them they don't. What you saw on the History Channel one is a particular case in point. What they did was they presented themselves in this one-hour show as if they were really going to deal properly with conspiratorial theories. And they kept dropping the term, some conspiracy theorists say this, some conspiracy theorists claim this, but yet they didn't have any conspiracy theorists on saying that. They spoke for the conspiracy theorists, but everybody else that they had physically on was an official mouthpiece.
Yeah, I can totally see that too, because it was interesting to see they actually brought up the topic, but then again at the same time it was dropped, like you said. It's like,
right.
Instead of coming from the horse's mouth,
we have to temper our enthusiasm that when we see these programs we get very enthusiastic that they're going to, you know, that, oh my goodness, times are changing, great, they're dealing with this subject matter, and of course that's our first reaction. But then I want to, you know, really coach your audience, our audience here, to be very, very aware of how dialectically and cleverly these detractors are actually detracting. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to realize that after an hour or even after a two-hour program, there they stand asking us more questions. I mean, that's preposterous enough that they can throw millions of dollars around and then the host says, well, we don't really know what's going on, and, you know, it's an ongoing search and nobody really knows. That already is so ludicrous. But even more than that, if you watch them carefully, they will present by proxy the conspiracy theory, and by the way, they don't even represent them really truly well, and they tend to not have the actual theorists on. So they're presenting for you by proxy, you know, the old logos thing. It's the old thing of you having to hire a lawyer to speak for you. So they speak for these so-called conspiracy theorists and then bring on in person and give 15, 20 minutes of long TV time to the detractor, to some professor or some Mason, to sit there and completely detract when they do not have a panel and they do not properly have the protagonist on in a proper debate, the whole thing is skewed, and people need to be very, very conscious of this, because what they are doing now is this. I believe that the media is extremely aware that more and more people in our world, partly because of the internet, partly because of shows like yours, are getting very, very, very interested in these true subjects of alternative history. They know that. They know they're living in a radical time. As we've said on previous shows, we are living in the most interesting and fascinating time, which is extremely short-lived. The fact that we have been studying these things dates from a very short time ago. Now, the Brotherhood, the establishment Brotherhood, know this. So they've been thinking, well, what do we do? If we crack down, it's going to be useless because they got the internet. And they got their own DVDs and their own, access to magazines and to the television, what you call it, cable access and all of this kind of thing, and DVDs and videos and whatnot. So they're thinking, then how do we go about it? We go about it by pretending that we're going for it also. Because people don't have a lot of access to the Michael Tesarians and the David Icke's and the Jordan Maxwell's, because those guys are like cottage industry. But they certainly are going to watch the History Channel, and they're certainly going to watch Discovery Channel. So we will create 1 hour or 2 hour shows ostensibly on these same conspiratorial subjects, and we will give the people what to think about it. We will present the information, and we will present what people are meant to think about it. So what we've got to understand is that these shows, these hour-long or two-hour-long documentaries, are made, but they're made in a certain way. They're saying, we know that you, members of the public, have a deep and abiding interest in the mysteries. We know that because Arthur C. Clarke sold out in his movies and his documentaries in the 1970s, even in the 1980s. We know you're fascinated with it. We know that when you go on Amazon and find out who has been buying books on the mysteries compared to who has been buying books against the mysteries, skeptic things knocking the mysteries, that it's books on the mystery that far exceed in sales those who are the detractors. So they know this. They've done their homework. So what do? They co-opt that so that you don't hear what Michael Tesarian is saying, and so that you don't listen to what Stan Monteith, you see, and Eustace Mullins and David Icke and others are saying. We're going to put these nicely crafted million-dollar documentaries on. We're going to sketch a brief by-proxy sketch of the problem, and then we're going to have all of our boys on from Harvard and Princeton and Cornell and from the Latter-day Saints and the so-called experts, who actually are jokingly ignorant when you really know this subject. You almost want to vomit at the actual disinformation and lies that these so-called experts are actually talking about. It's absolutely nauseating, by the way. But we're going to put those guys on, and they're going to tell you what to think. We will tell you about these subjects, and we will tell you what you're going to think about them, and we'll give it to you in the dose that we think you're ready for. So if in 5 years from now you want a little bit more, we might give you that. 5 years ago, you listened to Carl Sagan. Now you want something more. So we'll give you another set of lies. So every period of time, they come out with this glossy stuff, and of course they know that the 300 million people, millions are going to watch that. That people like myself cannot get access to. Obviously, I'm not complaining about it. It's just a simple fact. And this is why we have to be extremely conscious now of taking apart and deconstructing a lot of these shows, because they're going to be that old 80-20, 70-30, give you a little bit of truth, but they're going to give you major lies to put you off the scent. And this is extremely important, because let me again emphasize this, and I want everyone who's from America to listen up to what I'm saying. Your country is very, very new. And it was not part of the plan that the ordinary people of America should ever find out about the origins and the secret history of this country. So when you have books by David Olvison exposing the geometry of Washington, D.C. and the Masonic connections there and its connection to astrology, and when you have Graham Hancock doing what he's doing, and when you have all these other authors, when you have geniuses like Eustace Mullins and Jordan Maxwell, that was not part of the plan. It's not the plan to have people like Anthony Hilder loose. So in a way, they're realizing that you are about to find out in an extremely recent period of time. See, Europe existed for thousands of years before modern people even start asking questions about who ruled anything. But in this country, it's only been within 180 years that already this country, the middle classes of America, are starting to listen to Alex Jones and find out about bohemian societies and skulls and bones, that you even have it on major news talk shows. This irritates the Brotherhood very severely. They're conscious of the fact that what would happen if this really got out there and some people's champion that people did trust. So when Bill Mayer starts talking about Secret Brotherhood, he's erased. Oh. This show is canceled. When you have Martin Downey, you know, a couple of years back, and he starts having people like Bo Greitz on his show, he's canceled, etc., etc., etc. So, America better realize that you are on the most incredible place in your life, in this country's history, of really, truly taking the lid off something. It's a miraculous thing. I can't go into all the reasons why this is happening. I try to deal with that in the 2012 DVD and in some of my articles about why this is actually happening. It has to do with something very, very spiritual that's taking place here. But the Brotherhood knows that, and it's reacting. It's going to react with its, you know, tranquilizers. It's ready. So Americans need to realize that you're going to have a barrage of these kinds of shows that appear to co-opt a lot of this information and skew it. So you have to be highly aware. You've got to follow through and not just believe everything and really do your homework, because otherwise you will end up replacing your complete ignorance with a sort of a another kind of, something that you might consider knowledge, but it's not really knowledge at all. It's another form of ignorance, even more deadly, a kind of poison. And then you might be satisfied, and then suddenly this will become vogue, and everybody sitting around the coffee shops is talking about Illuminati and conspiracy without even having a faintest idea. It'll be like another, you know, thing upon which there's a million and one theories, there's a million and one opinions, just like everybody's got an opinion about the assassination of John F. Kennedy. You know, you may have an opinion about it, but the actual fact of the matter is, as Bo Greitz exposed, it was British Intelligence, Division 5, who through Mossad and through the Mafia came up through South America and killed a guy and then departed. All right, that's the actual story, but of course the actual story is, you know, swamped in 101 or a million and one theories. So tomorrow, and look when we're even talking on previous shows, you and I, about the Aton Pyramid, you know, and the fact that I at the top and all, how many theories are there about that image? And yet hardly any of them have got it right.
Yeah, it's definitely incredible information. And let's pick up on that point. We're going to take a short little break here, and we'll pick up back where we're leaving off here, and we'll catch everybody on the flip side of this. And thank you very much again for coming on tonight, Michael. It's always a pleasure to have you on, and the knowledge that you share with us, and hopefully it enlightens others as it does me. So I thank you again for coming on.
It's mutual, my friend. Like I say, you know, without the opportunity to have the platform, you know, the airways would be dead. So, you know, it's like the same situation of you can't see your favorite band unless there's the people to drive the coach and the road crew to put up the lights and to prepare the auditorium and to make you sound and look good. So, yeah, you may be the greatest musician in the world, but if you don't have the road crew, you're nothing.
You're busking
on the side of the street.
All right. Well, everybody, we'll catch you here in about 5 minutes, and we have Michael Tesserian tonight, as you've been listening to, and I'll catch you on the flip side of this.
Your only experience ever is this. This is your only experience ever. civilization.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revere Radio Network. Remember, Revere Radio Network is listener-sponsored radio. Now, it's not all about the Benjamins, but believe me, that shit helps.
To the bunker here on RevereRadioNetwork.com. We have tonight a very special guest. If you've been listening for the last hour, we have Mr. Michael Tesserian with us. And Michael, a quick question for you. I find myself, even with a bit of base knowledge on what you're talking about, and most of my listeners do also, still very dumbified down and brainwashed and basically manipulated in a way to where I do understand, but I find myself learning new every day, but it's still, the brainwashing has done its job well as far as I'm concerned. So even open people, being pagan or into astrology even, are so blinded to what's really going on. And why is this?
That's right. Exactly concur with that. That, you know, I do my work and I have many, many great people, you know, thousands of people, and mostly they're from the middle class. But, you know, I have very few hippies, or very few Wicca, or any of these people who claim to be, you know, so open-minded, ever contacting us. I've yet to see a hippie turn up at one of my talks. Yet you'd think that those would be the first people, because ostensibly, openly, aren't they meant to be the free thinkers? No, they're some of the most closed-minded, lost souls that exist. And the same goes, excuse me for being so blunt, with a lot of the other groups that are meant to be paganistic or whatever, you know. So, yeah, you know, they're not going to ask any questions because they think they've got their little thing. They've got their little ego pacifier. They've got their little narcissistic trip going there, which is basically a fashion. I mean, it's nothing more than a fashion. That's all. It's just a long-standing fashion. And therefore, they're content. They don't want to be using their brain at all. But the real reason why you know, there's a resistance from even people that might be referred to as open-minded normally, is because this is a long-standing campaign. It's a drip-feed kind of tranquilization of the human race. And probably also, if people have followed my work in Atlantis, they will remember that I have a theory about the human ego that follows on from Julian Jaynes and from Terence McKenna's research, and some of these individuals who have noticed purely biologically and also through scientific tests, not metaphysical, but physical testing of the brain, has shown that it's rooted in trauma. Sigmund Freud was, of course, the first to really discover this, that many of the diseases and illnesses and proclivities and neuroses of the earth, of the brain, of the mind, seem to be hereditary. They seem to have been rooted in the limbic past. They seem to come from a deep place historically in which there was a traumatic type of situation. You know, we all realize that when a child is born, to give a physical example, we understand that the birth of a child is very traumatic. Well, now try to take that kind of feeling of trauma to the ego itself. I know it's a little bit difficult to understand, but the mind itself, consciousness, thinking, waking consciousness, was not the same that we have now, even 2,000-3,000 years ago, and it certainly was not the same 11,000 years ago. Now, the American genius who spoke on this is Julian Jaynes. But many other people, like Alan Watts and Terry Kellogg and other writers, have also started to question this, but they are not able to put their finger on what is the primal trauma. In my work, I show that fear of the dark and fear of loneliness and fear of noises in the sky and a fear of certain insects and a fear of the ocean, these are all physiological. Because once upon a time, about 13,500 years from where we are now, this earth was wrecked with devastation and polar shifting that was so monumentally catastrophic that it not only nearly physically wiped out the flora, the entire flora and fauna of the world, and we don't have time to explain all this, it's in the book and in the Atlantis DVD, but it caused severe psychic deremption, severe psychosis in the human mind, to the extent that I believe it's like, imagine an earthquake taking place within. It's like an average fear reaction. Say you're walking in town and you get mugged, or you know, you think of something, somebody's breaking into your house or something like that, or you're just about to hit somebody's car, you know, and you jump, you have that fear reaction. Okay, now magnify that kind of reaction thousands of times, and magnify it collectively so it's experienced by all mankind simultaneously. You can't even draw a picture of it. Freud sensed it because he was attuned to observing psychology, and almost anyone else who has done their homework in psychology, particularly people like R.D. Lang and most of the psychologists, even though they may not mention it, they are fully aware of the fragility of the ego. And I believe, I come in and I use their theories and say, yeah, well, I can explain this fragility of the ego. What you call ego was actually once upon a time a stabilizing mechanism in consciousness, meaning that consciousness was completely shot to death. You can imagine that it was just clubbed. The trauma had basically frozen the kind of consciousness that our ancestors experienced. And so, in fact, there was a death. There was a death of consciousness and a rebirth of another kind of consciousness that we today refer to as ego consciousness. And the reason why this is important is for two reasons. All gods and Christ-like figures that are put in front of us began as children, began as little sun children. You always see Krishna as the baby in his mother's arms. You always see that with Vishnu. You always see that with Jesus. You see that with King Arthur. You see that with Horus. You see that with Quetzalcoatl and many of the South American deities. What's the idea of this little infant? It's because these stories are myths of not of the creation of individual gods, but of the God, the ego. The ego being born as an innocent, fragile infant that has the forces of darkness preying upon it. So when you see the sun disk as a young sun, and the Christ is always connected to the young solar disk rising on the horizon, he's the newborn, nascent sun. This is a symbol in itself for the ego, the birth of the ego itself. Now, another way to, and the other reason why it's important is because the ego replaced the old consciousness that died. My work with 2012 is showing that we might be coming up on the second event of that, that the countdown to the end of the age of Pisces and the end of the Mayan calendar, 2012, might be, and I'm one of the only people who speculated on this, is that we might be heading for another conclusion of the ego that took place 13,000 years ago, the kind of consciousness that begins, comes to its peak, and then, you know, closes, and that, of course, is articulated to civilization, might also be coming into its close. I'm convinced of it because I can see the symptoms of it now. I've been seeing the symptoms of it since 1985 when I first started researching this. So that's the second reason. But the most important thing is this. The example that I like to give, and it's not a very good example, but, you know, it might do the trick, is that, say you're walking on the street, and suddenly you're about to fall because you slip on something. And your body goes completely limp, and you're about to fall. Does not your legs or your hand or whatever that stabilize stiffen, right? There's an immediate spastic reaction, is there not, so that you can prevent yourself from being injured, right?
Oh, yeah. I experienced that this last Sunday, in fact.
Is that right?
Yeah, my shoulders got hyperextended from about a 10-foot fall, and I extended my arm.
And what happens to the muscle? It becomes spastic, right? It becomes taut.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes it can freeze to the extent where the myofascia and the muscle itself can remain in that state, correct?
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember the actual technical term for that, but it's, I think it's like a... What happens when it like almost freezes, so it's knotted, it's very knotted?
I'm not sure what the term is, but that's what my shoulder is, that's for sure. I'm feeling what you're talking about, that's for sure.
Right, everybody knows that experience. Now, that's a physical muscle. What we've got to do to understand what I'm talking about is transfer in our mind the idea that the ego is nothing more than a muscle. It's just an energetic muscle. Consciousness is flexed. You have muscles in your eye, and you have muscles in your consciousness. And when we flex that muscle, it's called thinking. If you think of the human consciousness and the human thought and the human brain as a energetic muscle, you're going to really discover something amazing. That this thing, as you know, works the more you use it. So the ego is the kind of muscle that immediately propped up mankind when it was about to completely just go belly up. All right, this thing was heading for the ground. Consciousness was completely frozen, traumatized, catatonic, out to lunch, dead, gone. But the human being and his mind and his consciousness, as well as his body, is an incredibly compensatory organism. And what we had is not the consciousness that was whole brain, holarchic, like we used to have prior to these traumata, and prior to the invasion into our biology. We're not going to talk about that right now, but part of the trauma is not just pole shifts and physical ice age, physical deluge. I include in the trauma the invasion into our biology, but let's leave that aside. I assume people are familiar with my work on Atlantis. I just want to pinpoint this one thing. The ego comes in like a crutch, like a sort of muscle to hold up the whole edifice of consciousness. So what I'm talking about is that from 11,000 years to today, or from 13,500 years to today, we've been operating on one wheel. What we call ego consciousness is this unbelievably problematic, over-officious, totally, I don't know, competent, incompetent, whatever way you want to look at it, problematic, mercurial ego. It's the image that you see on the first card of the tarot. The Fool and the Magician cards are basically what I'm talking about. They're two aspects. The extreme naivety of stepping out into nowhere, and then the magician, who's the orderly, organized, super rational aspect of this ego. Another way to look at it is that you have the ocean of unconsciousness. Upon the ocean of unconsciousness, you have consciousness, which is like an island, a kind of a desert island, and that rises out of the ocean of unconsciousness like a nipple, or like a breast. And then upon the breast, you have this very hardened other island, or rock, or like a lighthouse. That's how you have to look at the ego. And the ego at the top of the ego has a little highly focused beam of light, and that is ego consciousness. And this is a pretty accurate schemata. You have the unconscious as the protean ocean of basically what is called the unconsciousness, for want of a better word. Then out of that rises what we call consciousness, but we're not even aware of a lot of consciousness, except geniuses are. People that we would consider the genius people, they're able to go outside the gate and sort of explore consciousness. Most of us don't even get to do that. We're in the lighthouse. The lighthouse is the super hard, highly focused beam of light, like a hardened nipple, and that is where we all stay. In fact, we stay at the very pinnacle of that, the very left brain, hyper-rational, you know, where the light is completely focused. So what that hyper-focused light allows us to do is we can make sense of a mystery, but only a very small mystery. We can focus our light very, very, very hyper-focused on one area of reality, but we sacrifice ambient awareness. So this is sort of the wave and the pulse problem that the quantum scientists have. Well, we got that in consciousness. And it's only those who are able to diffuse their ego light and spread it a little bit more around that they tend to be what we would call wise people or geniuses. The rest of us are trained in school to be so hyper-focused, so bloody super-lit, that we are geniuses in one area. Yeah, we have safety in one little area, and that we call our waking ego life. Now, because the light of that ego, Thomas, is so extremely burning bright, it's like a bright lighthouse, like a million suns. That's how the Vedic people talk about it. It's the thousand-petal lotus. It's so bright that it burns like a battery. It runs done. So you got to sleep in the day. So that's what sleep is. Sleep is needed to regenerate those who are, like all of us, burning our batteries so brightly. And those who have speculated on this say, look, if you didn't burn so brightly, you wouldn't have to sleep as much, and you probably would die. You wouldn't die as young. But these are all, you know, sort of side issues. Consciousness is a very important creation. But now the thing that I'm talking about is that, look, even this lighthouse can be condemned. The bulb that is on the top of the lighthouse could blow. What the hell? It's only 13,000 years old, and believe me, bulbs burn out. Look at the 16th card of the tarot. The Egyptians are going to tell you, the Celtic Egyptian tarot and their great mythologies are telling you that the consciousness is a tower that can easily be shattered by certain forces, and especially if you've already not looked after that edifice, and it's turned into an obscenity, which of course is what our minds are, there's no psychic hygiene, well then, can't blame nature for coming in one day with a tidal wave and blowing it down. Freud has already told you that, the Freudians are already warning you, the neo-Freudians have already warned us. And this is what may be coming along the line. Now, this is all background. What does it mean? If we look around the world and see the wars, the paranoia, oh my God, bird flu, oh my goodness, internet fraud, oh no, my credit card, let's have a national identity number, let's get rid of national currency and get the Amero, let's worry about, you know, this and that and the other, all the fear-based nonsense that people are just drugged with, when you see all of this culture of paranoia, when you see the government leviathans, whom we remember these people represent, this focused light that I'm talking about, these ego representatives, when you see them all sort of doing their chaotic, crazy thing, can we please learn to take this, stand back from the canvas, and understand, no, it's not just as simple as a secret society action in the world, or it's not just so simple as some mad scientists or mad, you know, politicians. Let's do some real metaphysical research here and step back and realize something about civilization and its nature. Let's listen to what Plato and Vico and others have said, and what people like Oswald Spengler, the historian, have talked about. That history which is connected to consciousness has times when it succeeds, when it fades, when it's coming into its ending cycle. And when you look at these horrors that are happening around the world, realize that these people are representatives of a rotten ego. So when you see the dumbed-down chaos and all this toxicity that's in other people, and even it's going to start showing up in people's personal lives, if it hasn't already, they're going to start seeing it, mark my words. And it's going to be everywhere, you're going to see this tidal wave. Do not get pessimistic. When you see this chaos, I don't want anybody to get pessimistic. The fact that you're seeing it for what it is means that you are actually one of the hygienic ones. You may be, in fact, one of the teachers. Because if you were part of it, you wouldn't see it. So the fact you may lament it, by all means, be sad about it, sure. If you see something horrible, tears should fall. That's natural, that's normal, at least I know you're normal. But also realize that it puts you to realize that you are not part of it. So my words are going to those people. I'm not interested in those toxic minds and souls who are ready to be, you know, they're taken out. Because they've been, you know, they've been pissing in the corners of the mansion. They've been devastating the beauty and contaminating their squatters. So I don't care what happens to them. I serve humanity, not human beings. And there's a difference. You have to think about it.
Well, there's a huge difference in that. I mean, you look what's happening right now. I mean, I can't consider these people that commit genocide and have no problems with, like you said, the children in Israel that have been so brainwashed and manipulated to write their names on, yeah, on missiles and on weaponry that's going to be used against other civilians. I mean,
these are small examples of the kind of mass murdering tyrants. They talk about Hitler. What are they talking about Hitler for? The British government the royal families have had, you know, the Vatican has unleashed 100 years war. There's a thing called the 100 years war. Go to an encyclopedia like Wikipedia and put in 100 years war. Then scratch that and put in 30 years war. Go now and ask the post-perestroika people who are experts like Yuri Lina to tell us what Stalin's death toll to the white Russian people in Russia really was. And you'll find out it wasn't just 20 million. It was 200 million people. Find out how many Germans were massacred during the Second World War that they don't want to tell you about in these cities like Dresden.
They were firebombed viciously in Dresden.
Yeah, when they tell you that there was a blitzkrieg, when they tell you that certain cities like Coventry and London and these places were blitzed, don't fall for that. That is peanuts compared to what the German cities had to go through. When you're talking blitzkrieg and firestorm, think Germany, what that country had to go through, and the thousands and the millions of Germans that died in that. Under communism, find out from the people who wrote in the Eastern Bloc countries, like the what I'm talking about is the Iron Curtain countries, like Hungary, Yugoslavia, you see, Bulgaria, all these countries that the communists took over. Go to people who are journalists who spoke about the communist atrocities on the Catholic and the Christian priests in that country, and the massacres that took place to ordinary Christian people when the so-called Cold War was in effect, and we had what we call the Iron Curtain, and we had the Eastern Pact. The story of Hungary, Yugoslavia, Romania, Bulgaria, of the massacres that were done in those countries by these communists has never been told. America doesn't know that. Well, it doesn't know it because you've got a communist government. You've had a communist government since Wilson, since Truman, and since Roosevelt. So they're going to hardly be telling you what their brothers and sisters over in Europe have been doing to the poor people there. But when you go into an ethnic area and talk to the Polish, who after the Iranian people are the most hospitable people on the face of the earth, is the Poles. You can't get more hospitable people in Europe than the Polish people, a more tolerant people. But when you talk to a Polish person, you better know something of their history and the suffering that these people have gone through, and know about the Khazars and the awful atrocities that have taken place in Poland, and the millions upon millions of deaths of Poles that they never told you about under the Nazis, and then later on under the communists. You better know about this, Hungary and Romania. When you talk to these people, they got a story to tell you that would dumbfound us. You see, this hidden history of these things has not been told because the communist government is live and well here. This super Fabian organization of Democrats, who are really the Democratic Society, the Democratic Club, who before they called themselves the Democratic Club were called the Jacobin Society. My goodness, that's nothing but another name for the Illuminati. And the plan of the Jacobins, the plan of the Democratic Society was that the Illuminati, the Masons, would create a party that would promise the ordinary man utopias, gold in the street, plenty of jobs, trade unions, lots of heavy industry, you'll never suffer, you'll never starve, and would systematically retract on every one of those things. So that their other brain, their other hand, would then finally, the most reactionary right-wing organizations would then command the attention of the people. If you have a Bush and a neocon organization today, it's because of the conscious, deliberate flip-flopping of Kerry, of the Kennedys, and you know the list goes on of all your so-called Democrats. They all shake hands behind the scenes.
Well, look at Clinton. You know, he refers to George Bush Sr. as his surrogate father.
That's right. So what we have to understand is that you may despise what's happening with the neocons. Ask yourself a question. How could the most extreme right-wing, absolutely abnormal, and I mean that fully, politically abnormal men get into power in America overnight when they were the most hated of all people and nobody would have given them any time at all? They get in because their brothers, the right, see, it's like Yuri Lina said, when the left-wing Freemason is finished, the right-wing Freemason takes over. So this complicity and duplicity and full weakness of the Democratic Society has been the it's like you arrange a boxing match in which you pay a boxer to take the fall.
So a Don King production.
That's right. That's what politics is.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Truman, Mr. I dropped two nukes on Japan, a Democrat?
Yeah.
Okay.
These are the guys who appear to be good on the surface, but basically their strategy, and in England we have it very obviously. In England, it's even more obvious with the Labour Party capitulations from the time of Clement Attlee. I think I told you on a previous program we were talking about why the Labour Party even had to rise in the first place. This was Society and the Theosophical Society, not the Blavatsky Theosophicals, but the ones later on, they came up with a brainchild to think that we've just had the people of our country come out of two world wars, and they're pretty mad. They watch their cousins and their brothers and their entire genetic line be wiped out. I mean, when Professor Tolkien came back to his village, just like so many people who survived the war, most of the men between, say, like 18 to 35 were dead. So there was incredible, and I can't overstate this, incredible disgruntlement with the British establishment. So again, just like I'm telling you, these people know how to work on lower parts of the pyramid to diffuse the spirit of rebellion. They knew how to create a Labour Party. And they knew how to insert their own chumps, their own lieutenants, pretending to be people's champions. It's the same way that they established your so-called labor unions in this country, and then, of course, made it impossible for these labor unions to operate.
Well, isn't the labor union in Great Britain also, don't they use the rose as their symbol?
Yeah, they use Masonic symbols. That's one of the ways I particularly, and people like me, exposed it, is through the symbolism that they use. But any time in this country, when a true person like Eric Hoffa or anybody comes up to actually do good by the workers, they destroy his reputation and they wipe him out. You know? And it's the same thing that they've done for hundreds of years. So the capitulation of these Fabians, they created this wing so that there would be so that people would vote for them, but continually down through the ages, be very, very frustrated. And I mean with a capital F. So that then slowly, 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 people would get to feel that these democratic clubs and societies are even doing worse, like opening the borders and too much diversity and all of these kinds of things and ruining the school system and whatnot. So this is how then the neocons, who just sit whittling on a piece of wood waiting, they don't have to be voted in. Hell, hardly anybody votes anymore. So they just wait for that time of what they call lack of confidence. It's like lack of confidence in the stock exchange. Like you can have a vote of no confidence. Well, that's what happens. Everybody doesn't vote properly. Even if they did, they'd find a way around it anyway. And they bring in now, by what people appear to be officially, they bring in now, under, say, it's like the old Albert Pike idea, we will get what we want by you people telling us what you want. Because you're going to feel so insecure, so put upon economically and socially, you're going to be so put upon, you're going to lose your own country, you're going to be put upon by every kind of corporation, we're going to nail your head to the wall, we're going to make it impossible for you to educate your children. So now what you will do is you will vote for the most fascist and extremist people who, if they actually really, if you think about what they're talking about, you would never probably have voted them in. And then the moment that these people do get voted in, what do? Now they have your vote. Now they pick up on their old enemies of old. Now they use your vote to go and murder and kill and mutilate their old ancient enemies to continue the process that they probably couldn't do in the open. And they do it with your vote and your money, and you're sitting there completely responsible. Because believe it or not, morally speaking, you can't say that you are not a murderer when you're voting for George Bush and these murderers to go and murder in your name. Just because that they create professional mass murderers to go out and do your dirty work for you does not mean that you can sit here sipping your Starbucks coffee and then tell me that you're not responsible for that.
Well, and I like it when people also, when they say, well, I vote for the less of two evils. Why would you vote for evil any way it goes?
There you go. Well said. Why would you vote for the left hand that serves the same brain as the right hand? This is what we need to get people to understand, is that this is a pigsty that has been created by your own edifice. They have their own hate groups that are funded with millions of dollars to make sure that if you stand up and talk about Judaism or Zionism, that you're labeled an anti-Semite.
Oh yeah, the ADL loves me, and also the Southern Justice League, I think is what they're called. I can't remember what the name of it is, but they're also another one that's, you know, you speak anything of anti-Zionism, you're an anti-Semitic.
That's right.
I have some great Jewish friends. I know wonderful Jewish people. They're not Zionists, though. It's a complete different thing.
There's many rabbis who are anti-Zionist, yet they don't get called anti-Semitic. It's totally ludicrous. And of course, people believe this because it's heavily funded and it's put on the television and it's put in plain view and people believe this. When you're talking about Zionism, you're barely addressing Judaism, as a matter of fact. Did you know that in the writings of the Zionists, they actually even write of their own contempt for Jewish people?
Wow.
What more would show their contempt than the Holocaust and the annihilation of their own lower class Jewish people in this Holocaust to serve themselves?
Well, let alone naming it at a Holocaust. I mean, wasn't it the only other time anything like that called a Holocaust or a Holocaust being mentioned in history was in the Bible with Cain and Abel?
Right. And Moloch. It's a sacrifice to the gods of death and to the gods of the underworld, of their own people, a burnt sacrifice saying, you're going to be sacrificed because we, who are an elite, who've been using you as puppets, we've been using you as a puppet show, we will incredibly benefit from this slaughter. First of all, we've got Adolf Hitler in there, who in 12 years is going to go through a campaign of purifying German blood, because when we send all of these people to death in war, we don't just want to send them as they are. We want to purify their blood, because this is a blood ritual, just like I talk about in the Atlantis DVD. We're dealing in blood rituals here, and blood rituals are better when we offer pure blood to our demonic gods. So they know that the German people and Germanic Teutonic people are very pure-blooded and love their culture, so we send in a devil's advocate to convince them to purify their own blood and to buy into all of that stuff, like they're the ancient Aryans of old and all of this stuff, knowing that they probably will buy into it because they've been artificially suppressed now for the last 100 years. They've been slaughtered and eviscerated in 2 world wars. Their economy's devastated in the Versailles Treaty, so they're very susceptible to what we're going to do. So we fund through Helmut Schlecht and von Thyssen and through the Schroeder Bank, all British money coming by way of Germany and Switzerland. We fund Adolf Hitler, our guy on the scene, to literally perform a purification, hygienic, eugenic experiment that all German people will think that he's doing it because he really does believe that we, Germany, need to go back to our pure blood. He decorates them all in occult symbolism, sends them off to geomantically placed locations on the earth, and has Anglo-Saxon people slaughter each other. The Brits do the same thing, and all the Anglo-Saxon pure blood is purified because it's a ritual. And all those German soldiers are there, grinning from ear to ear, thinking, they're having the faintest idea that they're actually being lined up to go to the slaughter. So that, and this is not the only time, by the way, that the Anglo-Saxon people have been targeted. And in this continual thing, remember, of course you remember the Spanish flu virus that came out after the Second World War, and the First World War also had one.
Uh-huh.
Then you have the Black Plague. So, you know, the European people, the pure blood, has been targeted many times, and even since Nazism, it's been done also. There's examples of this. So they target this, and later they've been doing it through vaccination. It's either the sword or the syringe. But let's just focus on Nazi Germany for a moment. That was a blood ritual. Himmler, Hess, Karl Haushofer, Adolf Hitler, possibly Göring, and very possibly Reinhard Heydrich. I'm pretty much sure that the ones I've just mentioned were in on it. Certainly Admiral Canaris was, because he was finally exposed as a British agent. But I'm sure there were other Nazis who were not aware of this. They really did think they were Germans fighting for Germans. The lower rank German officers probably did think they were doing good for Germany. The Nazi elite knew what they were doing, that they were working for British government by way of many intercessors through the Thule Society and through the Ermannenschaft and through many of these occult orders like the OTO and so on. They were receiving their funding, okay, through the German Workers' Party, the German Workers' Socialist Party. Socialist, red flags, not Nazi. Nazi stands for National Socialist Party. Let's get something clear here. So they were getting their funding from the German aristocracy, who are brothers and literally, physically, cousins and brothers to the British aristocracy. In Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, he's always railing against the German aristocracy. Yet 5 minutes later, he's in league with the aristocracy, the people that he claims in his book he hates. Then they fund this great German experiment that had nothing to do with Germany, had to do with destroying the German blood. The Germany that you have now, and that you see that name Germany on television and the news, that's not Germany. Germany died in 1934. There is no Germany. And by the way, the war against Germany has been hundreds of years old. You can't understand Western history without understanding the Germanophobia that has existed and the rise of the Bolsheviks. And America needs to know this, because not only is Britain guilty of sending Anglo-Saxon men and women to die against their Anglo-Saxon racial brothers, but because the Bolsheviks were funded by New York, by Rockefeller and Rothschild and Warburg and Kuhn and Loeb, right, and Brown Brothers Harriman, because they sent the Bolsheviks to overthrow the Tsar, that meant that the Russian White Army was pulled out of the First World War, and therefore that meant that the Germans, right, at that time, had nobody fighting at their back. So So all the troops, the German troops, could now breathe a sigh of relief, and all the German battalions could focus on the Western Front, meaning towards American soldiers and Canadian soldiers. So if there is an astronomical death toll of British, French, Belgian, and American and Canadian troops, then listen up, America. That was done because the Tsar of Russia was overthrown by Bolshevik scent from this country, and that can be proven. So when you see glad-handing of your Roosevelt and Stalin, understand what kind of massacre has been taking place in the name and the wonderful lionization of this hideous president who literally ensured that more American boys would die in hideous blood rituals. And the Germans were sent full of regalia to these places geomantically on the earth. Do you want to know what kind of occultism has been going on this planet and the device dividing and ruling? It's absolutely incredible. And so these people get into business, and they operate not from America. But they knew that the people who come to America are very frustrated with the old world system. So for a while, you've got to be very careful, and you have to stay behind the secret. You have to stay quiet, because the people that you're getting to come to America are healthy, you see, Scots-Irish, Anglo-Saxon, Italian, and French immigrants who are sick and tired of the old world system, and maybe know a little bit about it, and they don't want kings and aristocracies. So if you immediately start setting that up, then you're going to have a rebellion, a real revolution, not the full revolution that they constantly are putting in front of you on television here, as if some real revolution took place, which 5 minutes later is followed by a civil war, ha-ha. No, you would have had a real people's revolution. So what you had to do was play this game, and you had your Benjamin Franklins, just like I said that Adolf Hitler was a double agent for the British Crown, so was Benjamin Franklin. The guy spent more time in England and France hobnobbing with his satanic brothers and his Nine Sisters Lodge and his Grand Orient Freemason brothers.
He was Hellfire Club also.
And he and these others that you call your presidents, who signed the Constitution in Obscura, in Masonic enclave in Philadelphia, who designed their cities that they were going to live in and that they're going to sacrifice you later on in, based on Masonic geometry, who quietly gave you the illusion that the streets were paved with gold, got everybody over here on their million-dollar ships, got the wheel rolling, because you need to do that, that's economy. You got to slaughter Indians, you got a lot of work to do for 100 years or so. So just stay quiet, hide behind your, secret society stuff, and slowly infiltrate your guys. But to make sure that there's no dissension in the ranks, because you're going to wait now. So you will have your fraternities, and you'll have your Skull and Bones and the 55 other secret societies that operate behind the universities. You have to have those with fraternity just to keep the iron hot in the background, because you don't want everybody just going starting loving humanity anymore. So you keep your secret society people doing their bit, and you have a couple of world wars in between to get rid of American sovereignty, the whole nine yards. You insinuate the Federal Reserve through your British agents, like Albright family, and these Zionists who didn't even have American citizenship, my God. You fill your Roosevelt administration full of Zionists. And I'm not Jew bashing here, because I'm not blaming Jews. I'm saying your enemies as well as our enemies are there. I will not be put into the category of, hate mongering incorporated. I might be put into the category of threat, because I understand, I've always understood since I've been what? When did I started coming in front of the public around about 2000. Only five or six years ago. But I've certainly understood, even in my own domestic context, when I tried to, help illumine my friends and work together amongst what you laughingly call your friends and your own colleagues, as you were saying yourself not so long ago, that a teacher is the word synonymous with threat, period. And any teacher who doesn't understand that is an idiot.
Yeah, definitely. It's Manning. When you were talking about occult symbols also, the Nazi SS, doesn't that come from a runestone?
That's right. They're using ancient pagan symbolism. The whole thing is designed on ritualistic symbolism, exactly as was Masonic. Himmler never stopped talking about the Nazis as a black lodge, as a knightly order, all sacrificing to the black sun. You go to the original Latter-day Saints buildings, the original temples, and even the ones today, are filled the architecture with suns and moons and crescent moons and stars, and eight-pointed stars and seven-pointed stars, and what's more, black sun. People go, oh, look at that lovely sun. No. That's a black sun. Can't you open your eyes and see it? They go, yeah, that's right. Looks like a black emanation. That's right, because the black sun is galactic center. There's something heavy going on here.
Well, I know on the temple in Salt Lake City, not only do they have a massive upside-down pentagram on their temple, but they also have the Masonic handshake going on.
That's the whole nine yards. Anyone who studies Mr. Ott, his work of Revelation, on my links page, people just type to Control F. If they know how to work a computer, just go Control F and put it'll come up fine, and type in Mormon. And it'll immediately take you to a link on the Mormon conspiracy. People need to become familiar with this. That the Mormons are nothing, they're nothing religious about them at all. They're a Masonic front. In exactly the same way your Democratic Society is here, in exactly the same way as the Boys Brigade is over in Europe, in exactly the same way as these front organizations we've been talking about, just like government police, like CIA and so on, operate with what you call commercial fronts, just like the Mafia has done so. Don't you think the most powerful secret societies in the world operate in your face? What is Scientology? It's Masonry. What is Latter-day Saints nonsense? It's Freemasonry. They're basically admitting it. I mean, it's so obvious. It's a miracle to me that nobody's discovered this. They're agents of the Freemasonic Brotherhood in the same way that Freemasonry is a front for atomism.
Yeah.
It all goes back to the atomism, but we've been talking about it on previous shows in great length. Needn't bother, you know, going through the data again. So when we're talking about the Jews, we're talking about the Judeans, not the people who have converted to religion in modern times and who operate by going to synagogue just like Christians go to church. I really don't have a problem with any of that. What I have a problem with is that who has been using that to hide behind his camouflage? Who is the tiger that is hiding on the long grass and that is protected by these Christians who unfortunately know their Christianity through people like what? Pat Robertson? Mr. Mason?
Yeah.
Through Jerry Falwell? You're going to tell me that you're going to listen to these pastors who are now, of course, funded in their millions? They were actually once upon a time here about 10 years ago, fading out. A lot of them were exposed. Reverend Tilton, Popov, right? The whole list goes on. These are people who've been thoroughly physically exposed as charlatans. What are they doing on primetime television again? Because George Bush and the neocons have been funding them. But did you know that the same neocons, before they start funding the evangelist thing, before Bush actually became president officially and start pushing evangelism, these are the same neocons who released all the extremist Arab and Islamic terrorists from European jails and sent them to Afghanistan to help fight in the war against Russia. Did you know that?
Not at all.
That's right. The people, there were several leading terrorists who were Islamic extremists who had already been serving life imprisonment in the countries of the Middle East. You know, these Arab nations had already farmed them out and arrested them. It was through petitioning of the Bush dynasty and the neocons of Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld and Cheney and their coterie that these individuals were compelled to be released. And the reason why they were released is that they said that we will fund them, we'll give them money to have them go to help train the Mujahideen and the Taliban in the days when they were fighting the Soviet Russia. So vast, extreme Islamic groups. And by the way, this is provable stuff, by the way.
Well, I know we funded Mujahideen, that's for sure.
Right, you only have to look at the Rambo movies to know that, where you see the American, right,
yeah,
soldier, Rambo, that acts fighting with the Mujahideen. And that's rightly so, because at that time, the soldier would have gone and done his business and fought with the Allies against the Soviet Russia. There is it in the movie. Why don't people think what they're seeing there? Well, after the Soviets pulled out, did you know that the president at the time of Russia said, well, we're leaving, and the commanders of the military were warning the American military that now you've got a greater problem on your hands than you had with us, because now you have these Islamic extremists who you've just now funded and have given them a country, and they're going to be your problem for the next 10 years. And did you know that the American government silenced that and did not tell the American people about that?
I could totally believe that.
Right. Now, here's the end of the story. The worst-case scenario did happen. The Taliban, as everyone knows, seized Afghanistan, who are moderate Arabs, just going about their business, murdered, massacred, mutilated children. The unbelievable atrocities have been done. Even PBS has covered it, so I'm hoping everyone understands this. So they fund these guys. They allow Taliban to have a complete control of the country. Now they're telling you 5 minutes later that these are the worst threat, terrorist threat in the world. Oh my goodness, where did they come from? Did you know that these people could barely scratch a living before America was funding them? Before the American neocons and their Straussian brothers were giving millions upon millions of dollars to these Taliban and to these militia schools in Afghanistan, that these guys could barely dig a hole in the sand?
Oh, I could totally believe that. One thing I also have noticed with this is, well, it's the same thing with Vietnam, and I know the British started the opium trade as far as that goes, as far as getting China involved. But when we invaded Afghanistan, 1 year afterwards, the price of heroin dropped by 600%.
Yes, hasn't Bo Grice already exposed the whole opium heroin trade of the Bush dynasty and Richard Armitage through the Golden Triangle? I mean, this has been on mainstream television, and people don't remember. Of course they have. This is the old opium trade going back to the 1800s when China and India were infused with the East India Company. And the East India Company's Western component was called the Hudson Bay Company. That is basically the Russell Trust, which is your Skull and Bones Society. So when you say Skull and Bones, if people have been studying and hearing that term, Alex Jones has been talking about Skull and Bones, very important to realize this. The Skull and Bones is merely a limited term that they use within the confines of Yale University. It's an accurate term, but it's a term that defines the group only as they exist within Yale University. When you're talking about that group outside of the Yale context, they're known as the Russell Trust. This will help people. When you're talking about the Russell Trust outside of America, you're talking about a group called the Hudson Bay Company, which is controlled from Dutch, the Holland, and also from Britain. Okay? Now, when these neocons, to get back to the story, when these groups that we're talking about, these Skull and Bones type people, are funding the Taliban and cheering that now they've conquered communism or whatever that stupid war was over in Afghanistan. I'm thinking that was totally concocted. Now they have all their American troops. They're telling you that Iran is... aren't they telling you now that Iran is the next threat, that they're worried about Iran building nuclear weapons?
Yeah.
Why is it that not a single journalist who's also reporting on this is telling you that wouldn't you be afraid if you had 100 American bases and oil rigs and American militia outposts surrounding you?
And full of nukes at the top of that. I mean, I don't think, even if Iran did have nuclear weapons, I still don't think they'd be a threat to anyone because it's self-annihilation.
They're not a threat, but even if you go with the normal story, wouldn't your country be a threat if in a couple of years, because of the decimation of Iraq and also because of now the vast American presence, because Pakistan and Afghanistan want this, basically Afghanistan is America incorporated. So you have now vast American bases surrounding Iran. And
yeah.
Then you come on the American television and say that Iran is acting erratically and look like they're building weapons and they're getting too defensive. Well, my goodness, why don't you tell us why?
Well, a lot of people need to understand their geography, too. When
That's
you
right.
look at Iran, Iran comes right next, and then you have Afghanistan. So it's tic-tac-toe, and they're right in the middle.
Right. Now, here's the interesting thing, is that the same funders of these Islamic extremists, because you would not have Islamic extremists in this world at all. You'd have just small terrorist organizations like have been pretty much a sort of a problem down through many decades. Long before America was involved in Europe politics, we've had problem with, you know, Red Brigade and certain extremists like the IRA. I mean, I grew up in a country, you know, where you can find them at every corner. So what was America doing back then when there was terrorism on the streets where my people were being murdered and killed? Nothing. Damn all. So now they tell you there's terrorism in the world. But the point is that now, the same neocons, because George Bush is officially the president, is openly supporting, by way of Colin Powell's son, and by way of the entire pro-Zionist lobby, funding American pro-Zionist evangelists. You only have to watch the 700 Club if you're not aware of what I'm saying.
Yeah, Benny Hinn.
Right. Now, wait a minute. What's the problem here? What are we looking at? Are not these pro-Zionists, that means pro-Israel, people meant to be their worst enemy is whom? Islamic extremists, correct or not?
You would think so.
Right. So then who's in the middle funding both sides?
Wow. Well,
right.
It's like, I remember when...
5 years goes by. Oh, well, let's take it even back to Saddam Hussein, 1990. It's no more than 15 years of a chess game, and we know who the players are. Brzezinski and the you know, the neocons and whatnot.
And the grand chessboard, exactly.
Sure. So, my goodness, America.
Yeah, it's definitely time to open up your eyes, people. That's
yeah,
for
if
sure.
If you don't want to hear, and you're sitting there scratching your head about world conspiracies, Illuminatis, ancient Tudor dynasties, vague Vatican, secret police, secret societies, Aton, Egypt, and this doesn't sink in at all. Okay, fine.
Yeah, put your head back in the sand.
Let's just go within the last 15 years, and I'll point something out to you that you're not going to be able to refute. And just because you didn't see it on the media doesn't mean anything. Alex Jones did a fine work in Road to Tyranny showing you who these neocons were funding and that these so-called jihadists couldn't even get on their camels. They were, you know, it was just preposterous before the American guys, the small anti-American coterie, because when I'm talking about your American president here and his coterie, I'm not talking about Americans. These are British establishment fifth columnists operating in the American milieu, sucking your country dry. That's why I can spend my time, because my forefathers, the Scots-Irish and the Scandinavian-Norwegian people that are my ancestors, fought and died for America. And I don't want to see it going belly up to some Freemasonic enclave. And anybody in this country who feels the same way, and I don't care if you're from Louis Farrakhan, black, you know, Islamic people, I don't care if you're from Jewish background, I don't care if you're Greek immigrants, I don't care if you're Mexican. When you enter into this country and you move into the shores of this country, you are American, therefore you will speak the language of this country, you will dress in its mores, and you will obey its laws. You will not do anything that violates the public sovereignty of this country. But so I don't want to hear when I phone up Wells Fargo or, you know, any of these groups that they're telling you to press 1 for English.
You know, one thing I found out this last week that I found extremely interesting was Malcolm X. When you brought up Louis Farrakhan, it made me think of it. Not only is it an X, which would be 10 in Roman numerals,
right,
but also he was a Freemason.
Right. But I think that Malcolm X was actually starting to get clear on many of the things that we're talking about. Slowly, but surely, I think that the man had a true intellect. And I think that he, of his own person, was a very spiritual man. I really do believe that.
Well, I definitely enjoyed a lot of his speeches.
Let me tell you, I don't think that most of the people following him were remotely spiritual. So I'm not endorsing, you know. But many of the Black Islam people I've met have written some fine books. I agree, they're segregationists. And I'm a segregationist. I'm not a racist, and neither are they. This is, again, one of these, you know, libel, catch-all, catch-all phrase that they throw at you when you're a racist. And I always tell people, no, I'm not a racist. I am a segregationist. And so is anybody who has a care for their own people.
Yeah, I would think most people would be that way, but not all.
People are. It's just the governors and the politicians and these Masonic dudes up there, they tend to, you know, talk about these other things.
It's not politically correct to think that way.
Yeah. Well, it once was, and because it has now ceased to be, that's why America is going into the hole, period. Now, you can be any ethnic group and you can be here. You can be from any racial group or any intellectual class. But you better have America first. And that means the language, the mores, the customs, the dress, and the attitude. And just because you have false governments who don't have any of those things on their mind doesn't mean that you don't, and doesn't mean that you can't put your petty differences aside to realize that your country of origin is under attack, that there's nowhere to go except the Pacific Ocean, and that these people are not strong, they don't have power, they have control, and that you're giving that power away, and you need to discover. And as I'm saying, I'm not pessimistic. I have never ever forget that a minute goes by in my life, because I work in this field every day, I'm constantly doing research. So it never leaves my mind or my consciousness how well we're doing to discover this stuff in such a recent time. Because I've got Europe very much on my mind. I have ancient history very much on my mind. And I cannot point to any coterie or sect or organization down through time in their own time. Roman, Greece, Egyptian, you know, French, English, whatever, Russian. Maybe in Russia you had it a little bit. But I really can't think of any proactive group. I can think of a few writers or individuals who lived a desperate life trying to awaken their fellows, but I cannot think of any mass group or mass radio network, people like yourself and Alex Jones, etc., where they ever were exposing this kind of information. So for goodness sake, nobody listening to us should take this for granted. Never take it for granted. Do not get pessimistic when you see the machinations of the Brotherhood. We are doing incredibly well. So even when you see that certain members in the, you know, the extreme right-wing Christian movement have got a piece of the puzzle, but they tend to be Jew bashers, you know, don't worry about it. Just see them. That's erroneous. That's an error that they're doing. When you see these white supremacist groups have a little piece of the truth, you know, because they want their rights to speak up as people who are of the white Caucasian race.
And as they should have a right to speak
up. They should have that right, absolutely. But they shouldn't have a right to be going burning up and killing and mutilating anybody else. Oh, of course, let me also say that I believe that a lot of these white supremacist groups are funded by the Masonic edifice so that people will get a bad impression. I'm not stupid about this. I've studied it thoroughly. And I'm convinced that many people who they put before you as these skinheads, especially in Germany, are not the real thing at all. These are carefully crafted front groups so that people will continue to think in terms of, you know, when you talk about racism and when you talk about racial questions, that you'll be labeled this way. These are very important front groups, agent provocateurs, to give you a false impression so that when anybody like myself does come on and speak openly about, you know, racism in a true, authentic, legitimate way, then, you know, the idea is that you stigmatize those people through these slur terms. But, you know, I don't give a damn about that. I'm talking to people who are the new generation of teachers, because as I'm talking about the countdown to 2012, when you see the devastation and the immorality and the corruption that's happening around you, chances are you're one of the teachers of the true, I mean the teacher in a broad sense. It doesn't mean you're physically doing teaching. The word teaching means many things. You may never, ever talk about this to another person, but you're still a teacher because you're doing the thinking for yourself. My definition of a word teacher is a person who does the thinking for themselves and then maybe has the ability or the time will come when they extend that teaching to other people around them. But, of course, let's never forget that the word teacher, in my estimation, is very much synonymous with the word threat. And you will become a threat. And as I get emails from people all over the world, they do a little bit of teaching, and then they get exhausted. They're burned out because people are so resistant to what they say. So I understand that. You have to know when to back off. You have to know how to think in terms of the person that you're talking to and not just be didactic. You mustn't come up against their belief systems with your own belief systems, because that's no good. That doesn't work. You've got to socratically analyze these people's belief systems. Listen instead of talking, and listen to what they're saying, and then point out the inherent contradictions in what they're talking about. And if you're not up on what those contradictions are, then, you know, here's Michael Tesori, and I'm a, you know, specialist in that. My DVDs and books and website go into these contradictions to inform you what the contradictions are, and then when you learn them, you bring that up in company. You bring that up to your friends. You do it lovingly, you do it caringly, and you do it neutrally. You don't assert any point of view, because then they have the right to assert their point of view back, and the next thing you know, it's a dogfight, meaningless.
Yeah, I definitely get that point on that. It's like the first time I had you on. I mean, you gave me some of the best advice I'd ever had on how not to approach people on anything. If it comes up, let them speak their mind, and if you have the ability to debate it with any common sense, then do so. But other than that, keep the light out of their face.
That's right. You don't go into a hospital room or to the back ward of a mental asylum and start expecting behavior that's normal from these people. You won't even get them to speak to you properly. So, in spiritually, morally, you're looking at the masses of the world who are deeply ill. They're sick. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. They've been made sick by incredible psychic poison. Remember in one of the first shows we talked about it's really a war on consciousness, and let's never forget that?
Yeah.
No matter how many other ways that the war manifests itself, never forget it's a war on consciousness. So people are dumbed down. They've ingested lies. They're tranquilized. The very word schizophrenia means shattered mind. Mind in a million pieces. How could you expect a poor, infirm, sickly person who's on cold turkey, who's overstimulated, who's got incredible personal problems about how to raise their family and earn their living and fit in and all of the rest of it. How can you expect these people to get around any of these questions? It's a miracle we've even got this far. It's a miracle to have Thomas Wolfe on radio or to have Alex Jones. To me, it's a miracle that we've even got this far, because I am in no uncertain, you know, I grew up in the streets of Belfast. I've seen primitive. So I'm under no illusion about how dumbed down people can get and how murderous they can become and how immoral situations can be.
Well, it's like Alex says, you know, problem, reaction, solution. And that they do create in front of us all the time.
That's right. So we need to be optimistic to realize that we have this duty to see reality as it really is. It's one of the hardest things to do. But never lose faith, because there is a lot, and there's more that we can do. It's a cumulative action. The little bit that has been done now that I keep saluting is going to increase. You've got an internet, so people listening to us, it's going to be even more sites, more links, more blogs, more internets within the internet, more radio stations, more web casting, more, podcasting and all of these things. We are now being given the tools. You see, before we didn't have the tools.
Well, you couldn't even have the airwaves before. I mean, you have no airwaves other than until, the internet came about. You couldn't go on air. You couldn't speak your mind, let alone speak freely.
That's right. In the first news programs that the British television had, you didn't even see a newscaster. Television is not older than the 1950s, and serious television, where it's current events, is also very recent. You know, there's a time, very short time ago, we didn't even have a, telephone. The Bible wasn't put in front of people till the 1600s. The first newspapers didn't exist until 1886 or something like that. And it wasn't really until the 1920s that most people in farmlands and outlying districts even heard what was going on in the cities.
Yeah, it's definitely an incredible information. Well, Michael, we have just a few minutes left. If you'd like to tell people how they can contact you, that would be great, because I know, we didn't go over that at the beginning of the show. And, of course, you can get a hold of me through revereradionetwork.com. But your websites, again, is terrascopes.com?
Well, yeah, people need to go to michaeltesarian.com. We've got that navigation page now, so instead of writing down all the various websites I have, about six or seven of them, people can go to michaeltesarian.com, and if they want the DVDs, it's originsandoracles.com, and the main site is terrascopes.com. There's a lot there to look at. I certainly recommend the links page, because that's where you'll find the sources.
Yeah, your links page is absolutely incredible. In fact, I would think it would take me almost a year to go through it, at least.
Yeah, I guess so. And on the DVD series goes into great depth on most of the questions that we are talking about, especially in relation to the ego and the fragility of the ego. That's in the DVD. We're talking about 2012. If people are interested in that concept, that's the DVD that deals with that. But the Atlantis DVD, remember, is 15 hours long. There's nothing created like this. The series, there's nothing like that. It's not a rehash of old stuff. It's some very current topical information that we need to know to empower ourselves as we are learning more. Yes, we've been given the tools to know what's going on. We now need to also know what to do about it. And this DVD, like we were talking earlier on about just the preposterousness of these idiotic shows that come on these TV channels, I am so fed up with it that my DVD series is based on wanting to veto that and and not have things edited for time and for content. The subversive use of sacred symbolism is the one that's been selling a lot recently, because this is another key piece of the psychic tyranny that goes on. And people can go to Origins and Oracles and read all about it and pay attention to the various descriptions of each of the DVDs, because they all have a current theme running through them.
Oh, yeah, and people definitely need to be aware of these symbols, because you're bombarded with them daily.
That's right. So each of the DVD series has a theme running through it, which is the empowerment of people. But each one has a specific, fundamental area that it deals with. So if you want to awaken the children, and you want one that's not so, into the Christianity thing, then, I find that subversive symbolism is the best one. It's like a primer. It's a very, very neutral one that doesn't get people all hot under the collar, and yet deals very deeply with something that most of the world can relate to and get into, even if they're not, familiar with alternative history and so on. So it's just a matter of providing the goods, providing the knowledge that we need to be empowered with, because we are in the age of revealing. The Armageddon is not to come. It's already taking place. It's right here and right now. And if you are a person who is sane in this crazy, mad world, then you are a teacher, and it is time now to matriculate yourself into these teachings and take it further to your brothers and sisters in the world.
Very well said, sir. And again, I thank you so much for coming on and sharing your in-depth knowledge with us again. I always appreciate it, and it's always just such a pleasure, and I hope to have you on very soon again.
Magic. It's most appreciated, Thomas. All the best. We'll do it again soon.
All right. Thank you, my friend. You have a great night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, there you got it, folks. That was Michael Tesserian again. And you can also contact Michael, like we said earlier, at michaeltesserian.com or at terrascopes.com. And you can contact me at dwolf420@yahoo.com or Yahoo Instant Messenger dwolf420 or at revereradionetwork.com. I'm going to take a short break and play a little bit of music, and we'll get back to some news that's breaking. And, yeah, I'll catch you on the flip side of this. Thanks for tuning in to From the Bunker on RevereRadioNetwork.com.
Ideas, no barcode, no party, no ID, no beers, your bank card, your license, your thoughts, your fears, no SIM card, no disco, no photo, not here, your blood, your sweat, your passions, your regrets, your profits, your time off, your fashions, your sex, your pills, your grass, your tits, your ass, your laughs, your balls, we want
your soul.
Your fads, your fears. Give us your address, your shoe size, your ears, your digits, your plans, your number, your eyes, your schedule, your desktop, your details, your life. Show us your children, your photos, your home. Here, take credit, take insurance, take a loan. Get a job, get a pension, get a haircut, get a suit. Play the lottery, play football, play the field, score some toot. We'll show you dream, we'll show you suit, we'll buy you dream, we'll pay your book. We'll sell you crap, we'll charge you back. Wanna buy big guns in the front of cash? Your love, your dreams, your checkbook, your essence, your sweat, your screams, your security, your sobriety, your innocence, your society, yourself, your place, your distance, your space.
Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here, watch this. Shut up. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
Matters. Here's Britney, here's cola, here's pizza, here's TV, here's some rock, and some roller. Watch commercials, more commercials, watch Jerry, not Oprah. Buy a better life, from the comfort of your sofa. Here's popcorn, here's magazines, here's milkshake, here's blue jeans, here's padded bars, here's armpit dress, here's football shirt, here's baseball cap, here's live talk shows, here's video games, here's cola life, here's tin morning, here's filter tips, here's college minutes, here's all night long, here's plastic.
Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here's American Gladiators. Watch this. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Here is American Gladiators. Here is 56 channels of it. Watch these pituary retards bang their fucking skulls together and congratulate you on living in the land of freedom. Here you go, America. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
Revere Radio Network Tampa, the worldwide home of free speech.
All right, welcome back to the bunker here on revereradionetwork.com. Now, as I see this, the media's Middle East rules of engagement, they pretty much go as follows. We'll sit with rule number one. Now, we need to see the Middle East through Israeli eyes. And rule two would be, treat American and Israeli governmental statements as hard news. Three would be to ignore the historical context. Four, avoid the fundamental legal and moral issues posed by the Israeli occupation. Now, rule five would comprised of suppress or minimize news to unfavorable, you know, to the Israelis. So we wouldn't want to do that. Rule 6 would be muddy the waters when necessary. Rule 7, credit all Israeli claims, even if wholly unfounded. Rule 8 would be doubt all Palestinian assertions, no matter how self-evident. Rule 9, condemn only Palestinian violence. Rule 10, disparage the international consensus supporting Palestinian rights. Now, there's an 11th rule that hovers over all the other rules, though. And that's equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. You know, and Michael and I just got through talking about that. You know, and how important it is to realize what the difference is between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism is. So, and that's for you to go figure out. I could do a whole show on that. Maybe I'll have Freeman on next week and we'll talk about this. But it's, you know, this is so disgusting what's going on. And the behavior with people in this country are like, oh, well, it's not us. It is us. Israel is us. Israel is us in Great Britain. That's who Israel is. So get that in your heads, people, before you think it's Israel's problem. It is our problem. We are the murderers. We are the terrorists. And if you say, no, I'm not. I never did it. If you pay taxes in this country, yes, you are. Yes, you are. You are a murderer and you are a terrorist. I hate to tell you this, but yeah, you need to go look in the mirror and figure that out. What are you going to do to change that? Yes, you yourself can change this world. If you think, I'm just one voice, what can I do? Well, I have a million voices that are saying that same thing. It's called pull your head out of the sand and take a big breath and look. It's not that difficult, people. You know, obviously this terror is just fine, you know. You know, Israel's savage behavior in Lebanon is no big deal. You know, quick history lesson here. You know, following the assassination of Reinhard Heydrich by Czech partisans in 1942, Hitler's government executed all the men in this village called Lidice. Now, sent its women and its children to concentration camps and razed the village to the ground. You know, a few weeks later, the barbarism was repeated on the village of Lezki. Now, I cannot think of another historical example which better parallels Israel's savage behavior in Lebanon. Now, two of its soldiers are kidnapped, and Israel quickly destroys much of the infrastructure of Lebanon, cuts off from the entire world, cuts the complete country off from the entire world, and kills, you know, and at the time of this broadcast, what, 235 civilians so far? Civilians, people. I mean, this is disgusting, and they're getting ready for an all-out invasion. You know how many more civilians are going to be killed if they go into all-out invasion? This is true genocide. Get it through your heads. This is genocidal. Now, here's more historical fact for you on this. And this is recent history. So get this into your heads on what's really happening here. Because your local news and your U.S. news is not going to tell you. And no, the BBC is not going to help you out. All right? That's just light brainwashing, the BBC is. I love it when my liberal friends actually have the balls to say, well, you know, I don't watch the world news because it's a lie. But, you know, BBC, they have a different slant on the same story. Yeah, whatever. But here we go with the two Israeli soldiers that were captured in Lebanon. All right? Now, the Lebanese Shiite Hezbollah movement announced on Wednesday that its guerrillas have captured two Israeli soldiers in southern Lebanon, implementing our promise to free Arab prisoners in Israeli jails. Our struggles have captured two Israeli soldiers in southern Lebanon, a statement by Hezbollah said. Now, here's another one. The two soldiers have already been moved to a safe place, it added. The Lebanese police said that the two soldiers were captured as they infiltrated into the town of Ayeta al-Shabib inside the Lebanese border. And this was from the Hindustan Times on 7/12. Now, the Lebanese Hezbollah movement announced Wednesday, all the same day, and this is from different news agencies. The Lebanese Hezbollah movement announced Wednesday the arrest of two Israeli soldiers in southern Lebanon. Lebanese police said that the two soldiers were arrested as they entered the town of Ayeta al-Shabib inside the Lebanese border. Inside the Lebanese border. Israeli aircraft were active in the air over southern Lebanon, police said, with jets bombing roads leading to the market town of Nabata. 60 kilometers south of Beirut, Bahrain News Agency, and this is also on 712. Now, translation to this, according to the Lebanese police force, the two soldiers were captured in Lebanese territory in the area of Ata al-Chabib, close to the border, whereas Israeli television indicated that they had been captured in Israeli territory. And this is from France News, Yahoo.com, also on 712. This one comes from MonstersandCritics.com on 7/12. In the afternoon, the scene changed in the streets of southern Lebanon, which was the target of 32 Israeli raids that mainly targeted areas near the area where the two soldiers were captured in Ati al-Chabib, close to the border with Israel. It's close to the border, but they're not in Israel. They're in Lebanon. So they're not kidnapped, they're captured. It's that simple. You know, it all started on July 12th. And this is from Asia Times. It all started on July 12th when Israeli troops were ambushed on Lebanon's side of the border with Israel. Hezbollah, which commands the Lebanese south, immediately seized on their crossing. They arrested two Israeli soldiers, killed eight Israelis, and wounded 20 in the attacks inside Israeli territory. And this is from Asia Times, 7/15/06. But they captured the two in Lebanon. All right. Now, this is another one that's been translated from VoltaireNet.org. In a deliberate way, Tashel sent a commando in the Lebanese backcountry to Ata al-Chabib. It was attacked by Hezbollah, making two prisoners. Now, do you get it yet? Israel sent troops across the border into Lebanon. Then they claimed the captured invaders were kidnapped victims and launched their attacks, and are still launching to this day, backed by you and I. All Americans are guilty of these atrocities. All of us are guilty as hell. So what are you going to do about it? You know, obviously we didn't do anything about Bush in his illegitimate presidency. Totally illegitimate presidency. Let him do 4 years, and then brought him back in for four more. I mean, tell me if we don't deserve this as a people. I personally think we totally deserve it. This is disgusting. You know, this is the price you pay. This is the price you pay for sitting in on your ass and not doing a damn thing about it, not raising your voice, not going to your congressman and telling them you're going to oust his little dumb ass out of there and he gets no more little per diems from raping you. I mean, my God, people, it is time to climb out of your hole and do something. That's all there is to it. It is time to do something. We're all getting screwed here, left and right. There's genocide going on in Iraq, genocide going on in Lebanon, genocide going on in Afghanistan.
No, we're fighting the terrorists.
Now, come on. Think for one moment. Think for yourself. Can you do that? Can you really do that? I'll be surprised. You know, if... Christ, if 20,000 people in this country actually thought for themselves at the same time, we could make a difference. Think about that. That's all it takes. It doesn't take much. It really doesn't. A million of us go hit D.C., we could oust them all and have them arrested. What are they going to do? Well, they'll kill a few of us, sure. Maybe a few hundred. But that's that's about it. They can't gas and poison us. Now, they can use pepper spray and those fun gases, but not deadly ones. So think about it, people. I want you to ponder these points. You know, another point we brought up, Michael and I. You know, and that's on, we're going to get chipped here real soon. Think about that. Remember what IBM did with the Nazis? Think about it. Well, Verichip and IBM are the same thing, people. Exact same thing. So it's coming to us. We can lay down now. Sure, you can lay down and be blind. But it's going to come to your doorstep real soon. If you don't want it coming to your doorstep, you better act now. Act now before it's too late. It might already be too late. I personally don't think it is. I think we can change the world in a day. I truly do. If people speak out and be true to themselves. Now, I'm not sitting here claiming on some high horse that I'm a perfect human being. By all means, no, never. Life is a constant learning experience. But I do know this. If we act now, we can change things. So I want you to kick back, think about that for a moment.
Maybe even sleep on it. But by God, if you don't do something tomorrow, it's going to be too late. And that's all I got to say on this, folks. So I wish everybody well. I wish you peace, prosperity, and happiness. But it's not going to happen unless you pull your head out of your ass. So have a great weekend. Be good to each other. Be good to others. Be good to yourself. Peace.
President Bush, meanwhile, has been caught on microphone using an expletive as he discussed Hezbollah's rocket attacks on Israel. Mr. Bush was recorded telling Tony Blair privately that Syria should press Lebanese militants to stop doing this shit. The remarks were picked up by closed-circuit TV at the G8 summit. Mr. Bush also said the U.S. Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, would go to the area soon.
But at least it gives people
some process, I agree.
At which you, and
I told her you're offer to.
Well, it's only if it's, I mean, you know, if she's got a, or if she needs the ground prepared, as it were. Obviously, if she goes out, she's got some seizures at work, whereas I can go out and just...
See, the irony is that what they need to do is get Syria to get Hezbollah to stop doing this shit, and it's
hold that. Because I think this is all part of the same thing.
Yeah.
But what does he think? He thinks if Lebanon turns out fine, if you get a solution in Israel, Palestine, Iraq goes in a right way.
Yeah, he's from.
He's had it. And that's what this whole thing's about. It's the same with Iran.
Well, with me now is Baria Alamuddin, foreign editor of the Arabic newspaper Al Hayat. Baria, what will the Arab world make of this glimpse of the Bush analysis of the problem?
I think pretty much what you and I would make of it. It's
well, my mother taught me not to speak with my mouth full for a start.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with you. It's amazing and disheartening how lighthearted the Prime Minister and the President have been talking while hundreds of people are being killed, maimed, and displaced. This is a full-blown war on Lebanon. All the Lebanese, and I think every human being around the world, would be actually thinking if they have any power to end immediately this conflict and then make lighthearted comments like they did. So I'm disheartened, I'm saddened with the light mind and light heart that this president is taking this issue in my country, Lebanon.
I mean, this clip is whizzing around all the websites that Arab radicals and activists will be looking at. And that's what they'll be bringing from the G8 summit, which President Putin has worked for months to try to make some sort of a success of.
I think, you know, it's an irony that Prime Minister Blair and Bush are trying hard to actually distinguish this war of terrorism around the world and to put it to an end. What this conflict is doing is actually igniting this war. It's adding oil to this war. This is an innocent country. This war has been taken out of proportion, out of context completely. And it only shows that actually Israel has been almost preparing for this. To have an onslaught just for two soldiers, we can talk. At the end of this conflict, the sad thing is when everybody has been killed on the Israeli side, on the Lebanese side, what is happening is that the two sides will have to sit down and will have to talk. We have seen that Israel has not been able to finish Hamas, for example, and it's right inside its borders, its country. How on earth it's going to finish Hezbollah or others? Hezbollah lives in Lebanon. These people are Lebanese.
Just briefly, and I'm afraid finally,
yes.
Bush did mention Syria. He said, you know, we've got to get Syria to stop this stuff. Is that the big idea, the best hope for U.S. diplomacy, that Syria, because the Americans won't talk to Iran, we know that.
Yes. Actually, what I just want to mention two brief points. First, I want to tell you something that took place today on Al Jazeera. They conducted this survey, and 91% of the population in the Arab world, that doesn't include Iran, of course, because Iran is not an Arab country, said that Hezbollah has the right to wage this war.
91%.
Yes, which is very scary, even for, you know, for somebody who is an Arab like me. We don't want wars. We only want peace. Going back to your point on Syria, we Lebanese, we do not want want any proxy war of the Americans or the Syrians or the Israelis or anybody or indeed the Iranians to take place in our country. We have worked very, very hard to cut this, to get this country on its feet. You know, we've had civil war simply to get basically the Palestinians out for the purpose of Israeli peace of mind. So now after all this, this is going on due to a fact that Israel wants to make its borders peaceful. This will not make its borders peaceful. What is this doing is alienating the peaceful Lebanese. Lebanon will be the ideal place to make peace with the Israelis if only Israelis will stop the killing and the aggression. This is a humanitarian crisis looming, and I would urge every NGO in this country to come to the aid of the Lebanese. Thank you very much.
What about Clinton? Is there any hope in Clinton? There's no fucking hope in that guy. They're all the same. I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control. Here's Love Connection. Watch this and get fat and stupid. By the way, keep drinking beer, you fucking morons. Bum, bum, ba-da.
So full like it sent us always, and I want you to surrender all my feelings and goals today, and I want you to remain the power of children can amaze. I'll try not to complain. Baby, chemicals between us, the water.